we came out from the IFP. You're very welcome. And I told the Orion of Dr. Keating was abreast with issues and able to make an immediate contribution. Thank you. The other thing, of course, is to note all the apologies. Let's do the medical first. Long-standing, the Honourable Mantaj. We continue to wish her well, and she is making a very solid recovery, thank you. And will be joining us in September sometime. And then we have the Honourable Hill Lewis, who is totally fit, but just away on political business, so he's put in an apology. And I'm not sure about the Honourable Albert. Yesterday he told us he was joining us later and never came. So when I see him, we'll see him. Because, you know, we're not sure what later means. It could mean tomorrow. Are there any other apologies? Yeah, Honourable Jensen Hazen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got an appointment with SARS at 12 today, so we might be having an apology for early departure.
Does that mean if I keep you here, you'll find a pay a fine? All right. No, of course, thank you for the apology. And on that particular note, we look at the members here before us, before we adopt the agenda. During the agro processing sector, I hope some of you took the opportunity to visit the, they had some stalls here, very impressive. Did some of you visit those stalls? How many of you did? I'm talking about the ones right here in Parliament. It shouldn't discourage the men when it says agro processing for women. After all, you may be employing women. Yes, you should have gone there. Well, thank you, Honourable Kalaka. There we are. Okay. Adoption of the agenda. Well, let me put this in now, seeing as again some of you are leaving. On the program, there's just one small addition here. Not in terms of time, but just a change. On Wednesday the 19th, no, the 20th, sorry, Tuesday the 25th. Is the seminar on South Africa's regional and international obligations in terms of FDI. And it deals with, of course, to some extent, the promotion and protection of investment. It's due to start at 9, and I would like to start at half an hour earlier. UNCTAD have absolutely confirmed they'll be here, and they would like to make quite a substantial input, and we'd like to give them that hour. So some of you are coming at 9:30. I'm looking at those flying in yourself, Honourable Magnificent, and I would make a special request that you get the 9:30 if possible from Durban. All right, if that's possible, just speak to the airways. Thanks. It's Tuesday the 25th. We'd like you to be here sharp at 9. I would have liked to start at 8:30. So we have someone's proposed adoption of the agenda. Thank you, Honourable Bilako, seconded by the Honourable Colonel. Right, we immediately go in without further ado, and we ask yourself then, I think it's agriculture, from the agro-processing sector, DTI here. We have the Honourable Yunaki Spears, and thank you very much for being here. Thank you for all the support you give us when we're making inquiries in this area. Over to yourself, please. Thank you very much, DDG.
Thanks so much, Madam Chair, and to the rest of the members. Honourable members, my name is Yunaki Spears, Chief Director of Agro-Processing, and also would like to welcome and thank the companies and the industry that is supporting us today. And my presentation is not going to be long, but to highlight some of the key achievements that we have and some of the challenges that we also are facing in the industry. The first thing is to say that there is a significant contribution to job creation in the industry. despite we had a meltdown in 2008, we were one of the only countries that survived that. Obviously, food is a 24-hour business, so people will continue to eat, even when the resilience in terms of the economy has come down. But in terms of the manufacturing sector, in terms of employment, we contribute a lot, and we have established 255,000 jobs in 2015, which is a growth over this 5 to 3 years. And in our GDP contribution, we contribute over 101 billion and 24% of the GDP. In the past 2 years, we always had a deficit in terms of our balance, our trade balance. We always imported more food than we exported, which is, if you look at South Africa's history in the past 20 years, we used to be net exporter. We changed that dynamic. Obviously, some of the programs I'm going to be talking about in particular South Africa, in our IDF 2011-12 and up to 2012-13, we estimated that we would pursue China as market, for example, and we targeted 2 billion, and we exceeded that by 10, I'm sorry, 2 million, and we exceeded that by 10 million in that 1 year. And we're able now to be a strong contributor in the Asia markets, including Japan. We were included earlier in the year, and we have also contracts in terms of diversifying our trade. So what you see in this movement is obviously some of the stuff that the minister has done in order to strengthen our trade partnership. And for the first time, we are no longer a net importer of food, but we also export enough to create a positive trade balance. That movement is going to be shown on how on the domestic side we work and how on the international side we work. The biggest multiplier, this is a very busy slide, but if you want to focus in the middle, dairy, sugar cane, cotton, tobacco, groundnuts are in the center of what you want to drive in an economy. But if you look in your far left, where you want to go on labor intensive type of industries, wine, peaches, apricots. And you go up in terms of high potential growth, where we've got a potential, banana, mango, apple, and chicken, and avocados, especially for the Americas, that's where as a country we need to be. When you want to go into technology, you look at your left-hand side of the slide, which is the quantum one. Soya beans, although it is non-labor intensive, it's high growth potential because of beef alternative use, the benefit of the protein and the milk substitute. Eggs, wool, oats, those we are number 3 in the world in wool. Those are the things that we can advance ourselves in, into textile and other types of clothing, in terms of machinery. And if you go to the low growth, low potential and labor intensive type of industries, forestry is one of those, and rice, maize and wheat are one of those. And later today you'll see a presentation from that particular sector. Taking the balance approach, taking the wine as a key deliverable, the fruit in particular for the processing of our fruit, because we export a lot of raw fruit, and on the left quadrant, we've invested in a lot of dairies in order for us to be able to participate in the African market, and we've invested in soya as an industry on its own. Forestry, which is one of the key potentials we have in the country, is one of our biggest drivers, and we contribute 12 billion to the GDP. Although in manufacturing time it's not big, but in agricultural sector we contribute 5% of that. We've got a large forestry sector, the largest in southern hemisphere, that is a plantation, in other words we don't have it anymore, and those sectors are around 1.3 million. And it allows us to have a spend of 6.7 billion. What this indicates is that we've got an opportunity to do really well in this sector. One of the key reasons Madam Chair highlighted this example, we will host the World Forest Congress that happens in September from the 7th to the 11th. GPI is a core partner in that. We want to look at how we can enhance trade in the forestry sector, looking at non-timber based forests like honey, traditional medicine, and other things like mushrooms that you can grow. This economy sits very well within the strategy of rural development and the UN. So it is quite important and close to us. In 2012 and 2013, we used to support EIA for communities, but a lot of those communities would resell that wood at a 3M growth for power and paper. So it ended up looking at it as a D level. but it encourages communities and allows them to do honey and other products of the forest whilst they're waiting for the timber to grow at their full growth for 20 years, giving them that opportunity. And what is also key is that with the timber and the forest-based products, most of it is very low in capital. So if you want to do a honey business, honey costs around 40 rand for a 500 gram. You just have to build the initial infrastructure of the bee hive, and later the collection is continuous throughout the season, 8 months of the year. Some of the key things that we've looked into the sector are hive and paper. I've mentioned we only have two major companies in South Africa that are in the sector, and we did try to do a designation of upland, which we felt that because it's a monopoly, unless we add new entrants, it would be important for us to look at how to diversify. We're working very hard with the shore millers, and but now in understanding with SACCO to assist with the generation of new plant and equipment. As TI, we've gone out to ask the industry to invest in their plant and machine because it is very old. We also do a lot of furniture manufacturing support. We've got a design competition. We've done it for students last year, and this year we're entering manufacturers that are SMMEs that can show what different designs. It's a nice package that we do with ITC and FETA that can allow someone to design public spaces to give us an African look. We can draw from our own culture in terms of how we move design in South Africa. Members might know that a lot of people will choose the kind of furniture more than any other furniture, but it's important to encourage manufacturers to design with the concept of understanding how South Africans are. Mining, timber, and construction codes have also been a big factor, and we really are working hard to enhance that, in particular in the construction of RTP housing. In our incentive schemes, we have ministers been able to spend close to 1.2 billion since 2009 on our sector, and it's been a positive spend. And what I'm going to show you are slides on some of the incentives that we have. And it's good to say that over time we've looked at where our focus has been, which has always been happening in the Western Cape, and we've gone and started adding the Eastern Cape, Free State, Mbombo, and Northern Cape, in order for us to project around the whole of South Africa. In aquaculture, this is a new incentive. We have targeted at least to work both in the shell type of products and also in the fish. So we've got a combination of oyster, abalone, and fish farming expansions, and we've got new projects that we've put out that will focus on aquaculture. The Eastern Cape and the Western Cape are the key areas for this type of enterprise because already they have the marine water at their coastal, and also they have established companies that have been working in that sector. MSAP has had the highest uptake, the members might know, and it is good to understand that the conviction from Apple to say has been around 5% in the past 2 years. It has come down a bit as we enter other sectors. But it's also important to note that we've also tried to spread our footprint around the country, not to focus a lot on Gauteng and the Western Cape, but also reach other provinces. The Gauteng Fruit and Vegetable Canning Association has been in partnership with us through a triple P. And in that triple P, we have been obtaining key initiatives. One thing is the export promotion I made an example of. When we went into China, we didn't have gazelles, and our target was 2 million. By the end of that year, we sold 12 million worth of canned goods. Over time, we've done generic marketing campaigns under the initiative of SuperCan. And you later on give a presentation on how far that is. What has made this successful is that the industry was going down. It had gone to decline, and actually they were laying people off. And so what happened over time through our partnership, we've improved not only what we offer in the country, but we also attempted new markets. This initiative's traditional partner was the EU. And the EU, with time and with the discussion, led to continue with the audit, and now we've realized to find their approach around the globe. And lastly, is to say that we partnered with them on the nutrition campaign, which is also a buy local campaign, which is called Eat Well Eat Safe. And in that marketing campaign, we've also been able to exhibit and do new products. In South Africa, in the past, you could not get a canned product from potatoes, and through that initiative, we do have some canned products that are put in the bake. and one of the companies which are here, Mr. Fernando behind me, they came with a product which is called Quiche. And what was special about that product, we always wanted to use baby food as an opportunity for us to give nutrition to children that is not addicted. So they were able to launch, Minister launched that product for them, and it's doing very well. On this slide, if you look at the bottom side, that Chef is the product I'm talking about. The alternative use of other material for packaging in the industry is really important, especially when the price of steel and cans was very expensive. So that company came up with that Chef Yeast collection, and in it, none of those products are in any metal or can. And I did talk about the event that more cake town exhibition did with Minister, and where Minister launched that particular product. Over time, what we've looked at is that we wanted our cooking, or let's say our industry, to have a directed approach in terms of revitalizing the canning industry, and we've been able to include cocktails, gems, and other vegetables, some of the products that we've done, and we've also been able to do the new needs. I don't know if people have noticed, on the roads, cans, you no longer need to plan to open it, although that type of traditional can opening is still used by a lot of companies, that technology allows you to access the product better. The thinking behind this also is the fact that you do not want to put people off in using a can, so that it doesn't become a free cocktail for the Sunday lunch, but it's something that they can consume within the week to increase the domestic market. We also partnered with the industry to run a 10-hectare orchard in Robinson, which was given to a new community. Minister launched that last year, and were able to allow new entrants into the canning industry by allowing them to sell the fruits to the bean canners. There's a project that we're working on, and we've identified a phase in the phase stream in order to advance the entrance or new entrants into the sector. Small scale milling industry also suffered a lot. It's an in-between hectare between the big pioneers and hectare brands and the general public, which is the largest consumer of this particular product. Milling is a sector, is a sector that is not diversified, but milling ore, the staple food of South Africa, is basically a product of that sector. So people are either eating pap or mpobokwa, which is called African salad, or any other maize-based product. So that sector is critical in South Africa, and the pricing sometimes is a bit harsh for the consumer. We've started to work closely under an MOU with FABCOS, and they will make their own presentations later on. In that agreement, we then started the micro-baseball program, which we are now advancing to the next stage. Through Home Growing Investment Holdings, I'll show you some of the products that they've done. We've attempted to enter a particular sector of the market and to solidify that space. In particular, highly dense populated areas, as well as putting up most of our micro needs growth. These are places like Soweto, and we also are going to the Eastern Cape area because we know maize was the maize bank was in the Eastern Cape in the past, and maize is a agricultural product that they can produce affordably. My home mills under the umbrella of Kubusha is one of the most launched. They suffered badly. Initially, they asked us to do something that I had never done, to pay up front payment to assist them. And that mill, which was a standalone mill based in Devon, started to do their in-store promotion. This was triggered the industry to also do the similar promotion. Over time, it was very difficult for them to sustain in the market. But it was one of those projects that we felt we wanted to advance. Not them or the ownership was BEE, but through Soweto Milling and Elmo, which is also a protege of Ubusalos, Elmo, we will make their presentation later, we've been able to grow the BEE component of milling in South Africa. If you look at the shelves today, that is a retail scenario that we have. A lot of those brands are brands that are traditional. So if you were in South Africa in 1980, these are the brands you see. If you're in South Africa in 1990,
is a greater fee. If you went to a shop space, it's the same way. What you get is that through the meeting sector, there has no shift or change or addition of new companies and new entrants. Now it's homegrown. This is an actual project that is supported through MIT. We've given a forward buy of 14 million and allowed them to actually develop a new brand. It's packing now through one of the new companies that we're supporting. And through that, the company is packing the homegrown brand for them. We've been able to support them to develop that brand in the different products. And what is also key is that the affordability. Tabamilin is the partner with us in another project with Commerce Group, is 520 rand less than the average maize loan in the big pack, between 5 kg and 12.5. So it's important for us to understand that we're bringing a cost-effective measure by giving some of the incentives that are putting these companies. We've done a survey in terms of the in-store promotions and the tasting and the look and the feel. It has taken us almost nine months to ourselves to ensure that whatever product we bring is competitive. So these are some of the things that we've looked at. Pharmacists will get to themselves later, but what I'd like to add is that we've got a key focus on partnership in rural areas of South Africa and looking at small black-owned businesses. Some of them are big, they're not necessarily on the 35-meter threshold, but in terms of the education and agricultural production, we've made sure that they attach themselves to the farmers. Our initial, obviously, in terms of that brand, is the support and to establish a niche agribusiness that will create access to markets. We've now interested them not only in milling, but in other products, in dairy, in the fish oil industry, etc., etc. I think the incubation model that we've used here, not only via the farms, but also via the industry, in terms of the buying and promotion, will allow most of the black agribusiness companies to learn from them. Il Molino is a program, is a company that participated in our program through Kusumov. When Il Molino came, initially they were just making wheat, processing wheat for bakeries, the pasta company, but over time they've grown and now we're able to support them under our EMSA. They were the first company to apply for EMSA under CASA, and they are now able to employ 50-65 people. They'll also be making a presentation. What is special in this project? For the first time, we partnered with Louis Draper, which is an international grain freight purchase and trading company, and three other black companies. Through our incentive scheme, they've taken partnership into one key project, and then we'll show you how far they've come. This will be in the both in the biscuit, in the pasta, and in the bakery, this particular product. And we're also asking to continue with the milling in order that either they will participate both in the wheat and the maize milling manufacturing. Next one. The next one is Soweto Milling. It's a 100% black-owned company that produces this kind of maize, no? And in this particular program, we'll be able to support the building of the silos very close to them. We've now undertaken to do 6 silos in this particular financial year to support these particular enterprises so that we can give them proximity to the raw material for them to mill in the Soweto area. So I'm with an Old Mutual Fund. Under Old Mutual, which is the Masisi Planning Fund, and through NEF, we've been able to assist the project, and I just heard from the 287 million towards this particular project for the machinery and the cabinet. Under the umbrella of the commissioners, you can see our honorable minister in the particular picture. We have been able to make a big difference to IPEC in support of this project. And I want to end off by saying that I don't think Africa will be the same when these products are out in the market. Not only on the pricing, we will be making sure that there's security, but also the lives will change through the ownership of this particular company. We've got a program on regional integration, and in particular, I've used a very topical issue of agro chicken from America, 5 tons with agri industry, to explain to the committee that in terms of regional integration, South Africa is still the net exporter to Lesotho, Namibia, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Swaziland, of all food products, live and finished products.
what we've done through some of the work that Mr. has done to South Arabia and his business to the Gulf countries, we've been able to get new poultry exports. That will dilute some of the incoming imports from other countries. Although we are a net importer of chicken, our production still requires a lot of work, and we've got a lot of work that we're doing within the sector. The second part of the regional integration is to ensure that whatever people consume within the SADC region is of high value, and we're looking at standards to ensure that we are giving out the best products, both for chilled, frozen, and air products in the poultry sector. I've taken an example of how this one company, it's a big company in South Africa that in 2016 will support. What we did there, we opened the market for them, and they're getting 10 KFC franchises that they will support. We will be giving 1,200 pounds per annum for that particular cut, which is a 9-inch cut in the KFC franchise. Another 250 pounds per annum will go to the Matrix Kenneth Bonus Breast of Chicken, and the value of that is $1.2 million. And another 800 pounds will go for the crunch chicken pieces. The total pounds per annum that will supply to the Gulf countries will be 2,250 pounds. And that is just one plant, and that is just one country and for one project. The extension of this particular example is that when we opened Saudi Arabia and Minister signed some of the agreements, it allowed us not only to be a producer of particular poultry products, but to be a net exporter of that product because of our halal standards. South Africa inspires in terms of our halal chain, in terms of from the time the chicken is slaughtered until the products are finished. Now, some of the growth or programs that we've looked at that are of interest to the country are coffee, cocoa, and cotton. Those chiefs are one of the most positive ones we can do in the to global community. We're also looking at sourcing raw materials and adding value in order to create jobs. What does that mean? Africa produces 90% or 80 to 90% of the world's coffee beans, but none of that is processed in South Africa. We're trying to draw some of the raw material into South Africa in order to process and bring jobs. Another key thing is asking, we promise not to change our efforts. Most of our fruit that I did explain to the members that the supply chain of that is that we export most of our citrus without juicing it or value adding it. We do the same thing with all of our other raw materials. South Africa is gearing, we're gearing ourselves through the AgriHub to be the processor of those products so that they leave South Africa in a value-added state. Some of the impact interventions that we have, we've grown our rate of exports. We've also been able to interject some of the imports that we are taking from other countries, and the value into Sub-Sahara and those to the same. The time is also important for that. As we grow, we look at the regional approach. We have export promotion to Russia, China, and America, in particular for wine. The export of wine in the EU has grown. We had a delegation last year to go and view how we can increase our market. And our prized wine, which is one of the best in the world, has been able to increase their value in terms of pricing. We used to around £2. Now most of our wine is between £3 and £4. What we've also asked the industry to assist us with in that market is to ensure that the bottling happens here before some of those products go. If it does go in bulk, most of that wine should have wines of origin stamped in the bottle, of which most times most of those companies don't do that. The two programs that I want the committee also to be aware of is our Canvas Group program that we're doing with the Blessing Pilot and the Tiger Brand program with the Stockfeld. This will support our establishment of the 27 rural agricultural hubs and our hubs around South Africa. Some of these integrated programs will allow that 200 domestic agro-processing in order for us to participate in both in the export market and in the domestic market. Some of the hubs will ensure obviously that we improve productivity. What that means is that whatever people are doing now, if we add a hub in that region, they will optimize and increase their competitiveness by collecting. The importance of hubs is to
entrenched processing and manufacturing in the regime, in rural areas. Because most of the processing happens in urban areas, we find that we cannot develop skills in particular regions of South Africa. So skills development will allow that to happen in order for people to transfer their skills and process food and create central processing and marketing companies within the hub. It will also allow the provision of common infrastructure, such as logistics and other inputs. I want to say thank you to the committee, and I'll then turn over to you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you very much, Chief Director. Is it right? Is it Chief Director or Acting? I know that you were once taken in a higher position, so could that be Acting? Well, yes, thank you. We're going to actually, before we go into Fabricos, Matabo, and the others, do a 7 minutes for questions, 7 to 10, and then we'll have a response for 10 minutes, taking us to 10 o'clock. So we're not going to allow 3 minutes per person. We're taking it down to 2 minutes. So let us have questions, please. Raise your hands, please, honourable members. Honourable MacPherson, honourable Mpongi, honourable Elvis, honourable Kalako. Honourable Yester Hazel. Well, there we are. There's 10 minutes. 2 minutes each.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Very insightful, and good to know that there is one issue that can actually buck the trend of job losses. However, it's a very critical issue that I need to understand where you are with engagement with the Department of Land Reform and also the Department of Agriculture. Because, Chair, you can't have agro-processing if you're losing farms. That's a very worrying trend that is happening in South Africa at the moment. Land restitution policy is very airy-fairy. We have announcements by the Minister of Land Reform about land capping, the Minister of Agriculture on farm capping, and that does nothing to shackle the farming community and, in fact, to grow farms, because as technology advances, farms are becoming bigger, they're not becoming smaller. And I would like to know what engagement is taking place between the Department of Trade and Industry, land reform, and agriculture to further enhance our agro-processing capabilities, and where the Department stands on these particular points, especially with land capping and the current failed land restitution process. Thank you.
Yes, I think we mustn't generalize. I say that to both presenters and those who are raising questions. It goes to the next one then, the Honourable Mpongi.
No, thank you very much, Mr. President. I just want to welcome the presentation. I would like firstly to welcome the presentation. The other question, I think, is very important. Especially in the wine industry in South Africa, there are reports that some of our people will enter into partnerships with people on land, especially in the West Virginia, among the greater region. So your engagement with the government of the land, what is this matter all about? Because when they get to contract, they don't give them a fair chance to own the land. So the question of radical reformation of the land question is phenomenal. The second one, I represent Southern Cape, George, Knight, and so forth. Is there any idea that we can give of what you call a special economic zone in that area? Because you spoke about aquaculture, you spoke about manufacturing competitiveness, you spoke about manufacturing investment programs. And when I look at that site, given also the forest industry, I see the potential of economic development in that particular area. Is there any program that you think as an IPDI we can develop around that particular place and make sure that we create jobs and buy coverage in that area? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation as well. I would just like to echo previous speaker's point about land reform. Obviously, land reform needs to dovetail with your own objectives. So I'd like to get more clarity on that as well. And then, regard to your cloth. I came a little bit late, so I might have missed some things. The agro-constitution sector with growth potential in South Africa. High growth potential, low growth potential continents. Number two, sugarcane industry is regarded as a high growth or second highest growth potential. Can you just elaborate on that even the background or the unfolding situation now that a lot of sugarcane farmers are going bankrupt and that I think there's a lot of sugar being imported into South Africa. And in Poland Ford, what maize? I see there's quite a lot in your presentation about the maize industry, which seems to create quite a lot of jobs, but it is not high growth potential sectors. So you can just elaborate why that case is, why is it the case and how that can be changed. Thank you very much.
Very much, Honorable Elvis, Honorable Kalaku.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for the presentation. If I read you well, which I commend the Department of Health, you said we at least we have a positive balance now when it comes to imports of food. We are no longer, which is very much positive. It shows if we can put emphasis on agro-processing, we might deal with a number of issues. I won't put you in honest, but I know policy issues are not your, those are areas which belongs to us and your ministers. The only question I would want to clarify about the land in traditional affairs, they have started this program also of agro-processing, agro-parks, dealing with traditional communities and authorities. And there's money being put there. And also agriculture comes in also on the same process. It's worth with the land and traditional affairs. Therefore, that program of which deals with emerging farmers, is there a coordination between, so that we maximize the utilization of the money we have around this government, between PDI, land and traditional affairs, and also agriculture, forestry and fishing? Because these programs are closer. If you have can have between the department and coordination, that will help a lot in maximizing the utilization of the money which is around. Then the last question, which you spoke about, especially when it comes around wine, our exports and our markets in that sphere, which are our competitors when it comes to, I know India, Australia and Israel used to be our chief competitors in the European market and other markets when it comes to wine. I just want to check now, which, as you said, if I had incorrect, you said, we won the top exporters in that area. So if you can just have a few questions, check. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kalaho. Honorable Esther Hazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The key characteristics of agro-processing is strong up and downstream linkages. This applies to forests and forestry as well in the same way. And with for land changes, the mechanization and things management, the agro-processing sector's economic performance is closely related to the overall rate of the economic growth in South Africa. Firstly, at the potential for employment, which the definitely affect the other department see that. And it will also be important to ensure that local producers are appropriately positioned and support to benefit the growth of domestic and the export market I mean, I had a few units, and I think it was mentioned, the traditional export market is basically falling apart. So how do we benefit maybe from the BRICS agreement, for one? And then also, lastly, the settlement of 37 rural agro-processing parks, how is the, we've seen so many factors in the country, xenophobia and all that, how does it involve the development that the traditional leaders being involved in discussion, they sit around the table as well. Damakosi has always been custodians of traditional values and land and the country. Were they involved in this? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Yerza Hayton. Just a couple myself on the spheres. The emphasis was mainly to manufacturing and the assistance from MSEP. How sustainable is this process currently? The other thing you referred to, made a reference to labelling and not being able to give a country of origin and some exports in relation to exports to Russia, China and the United States. What is the impediment here? Because I thought we had a labelling legislation in our country that requires us to put our country of origin, which is related to World Trade Organization requirements. Could you just spell that lot out? I must say, you gave us some very good news. The suite of milling, 100% black owned. How many years has that been going? And is it now reached a sustainable? Is it making profits? And then you referred to an international company, Louis Draper, that made some huge investment. When was that investment made? And what sort of range are we talking about? A couple of million, a billion, or what? Thank you. Over to yourself, and you've got 10 minutes to respond to all of this. Thanks.
Firstly, I think I really want to say thank you to the members for such inspiring questions. I think we are trying to, not only to women's month, but we are trying to reach excellence. This industry allows us to change lives. The first question was from one of the members. I think the land reform and Queensland issue. When you're dealing with aquaculture, what you need is production land. It's the first indicator, first potential. And we have two projects where successfully we've worked with the community. In Alexandria, where we grow chicory, we had a huge problem where the industry declined, we had 100 farmers, and in a period of 2-3 years, they imported from India chicory, and those farmers went to 25. And the first version, 5% tax farms, and all those farms were turned into game farms. So you couldn't return them back. What we did there, firstly, they came to the Minister of Energy and asked for assistance, Nestle in particular, and the industry. We then used communal land. We were able then to look at land in a different aspect, where we allow the community to farm for a processing facility within their community. And what that did, it allowed Chikoro SAT 40% of their own chicory from this communal land. We worked with the rural development and they sponsored and assisted the farmers to be able to turn ordinary, it's not barren, but this land has not been used by 10, 15 years in productive land. And that strategy country has grown. So in the next planting season, they will increase from 40% to 60%, and most of that land does not come from the old commercial farmers, it's communal land. And what makes that a great story is that when Nestle came to us, the problem was there was no transformation in the industry, so they couldn't get on their scorecard anyhow in terms of buying from this industry. Industry was the only grower and player, so the price was always outpriced, and they found it really cheaper in India. We did a tariff, so we stopped Nestle trade tariff, and we did tell them that you cannot continue to import. Then they said help, and then we helped the land and assisted with the reform program to assist the farmers to integrate. Nestle no longer, I can't say no longer, we don't have enough chicken in South Africa, but it does not have that contract anymore with India, and it buys everything that we produce. We actually have gone back to where we were 3 years ago and tried to improve the situation. And that's how the community land issue comes together. Traditional leaders involved, the local councillors, local mayors, everyone is involved in that one particular region. And we have a very strong relationship with the Land Reform Advisory Bloc in agriculture. We sit on the outcome setting committees, and we also advise. So if we approve a project in a particular area, we also ensure that whatever product that is coming from the ground comes within that province, and rural development is very strategic in terms of the partnership. Honourable Mukwenyi, I think the key thing in the Western Cape in terms of wine is the future. Land and soil management practices will not only give the Western Cape an advantage because of overuse. So the first thing the Western Cape has to think about, where can we grow wine as a country, as a strategy related thing to? Because land gets exhausted. You can only farm it for 200 years, 300 years. It doesn't actually matter how many years. But when it reaches a point where it collapses, you need to look for new wine land. Hence, we are now looking at the Northern Cape as a key strategic area, especially around the river. And I think the question of people or companies being treated unfairly is a basic land issue. Most of the black brand owners in South Africa do not own any wine land or land. There's one or two that we've assisted through obviously the DEE, by over through the Department of Agriculture. So a lot of them own brands, and what happens is that your packer or the company that takes the wine for you, when they reach the season, which is around December, they never prioritize them. What happens is they either increase your price or want to give you wine. Some of the things we've done, for example, is to engage the companies directly on what you call sector contracts, that they will continue to provide the wine in that particular part. And it's something that we work with Water. It's a continuous process that unless there's a change, and some of the changes that we've seen, like Topos and Wines, where it's a brand to own the land, or advance in letting the people that work in the farm to own a portion of the land. Some of the programs that we've done. But the issue is still something that needs a lot of work. And the Southern Cape is a forestry area, the George area where the constituency is. And as is this, is something that one should look in terms of access to market. What would be best is a hub, the venture hub, and we've done the investigation. Through our honorable chair, we've met some of the people from that area, and we've looked at what you call a venture hub because of the forestry and the non-timberlake products. So what we can advance or do is to further see how many people, because when you talk about that area, it's a low-ski area. So you're not going to get people that are in the essence in forestry or in venture manufacturing, that you skill them over the mechanization of our policy, teaching them how to do a basic venture structure, and advance that further by giving them diverse non-timberlake products that I mentioned. Honey is one of them, and traditional medicines. And that area, by the way, produces one of the best honey in South Africa. So it is one of those products that can make a niche product for the export market. So it is something definitely I'll take with me and will look into in terms of developing it as a product. And in terms of the third question, from Honorable Albert, the sugar industry has high potential. Other members can see roughly on the graph. And sugar cane is one of our biggest economy. It holds the KZN products together. But if you look at the graph, it says labor intensive. So it is a labor intensive industry and it has high growth potential. True alternative means. Today, when you buy sugar, you're going to get brown white. But the other alternative to sugar, you can get sugar in blocks, which we don't use in South Africa, which is an English point, by the way. Through the IPA, you will see that growth. Ministers got a new program with the EU, that the trade agreement, IPA, will be selling some of our sugar there. What it does, it enables us to advance and make more products of sugar. Honorable Albert also knows that sugar is a monopolized industry. It's a very few player. But the outcome is that if there are supporting industries like sucrose that you could define and also energy generation. So it does have that potential based on those factors. But there are key limitations that are placed on the industry, like infrastructure. Most of their plants are 100 years old. I think they're celebrating one of their plants is exactly 100 years old. And what it means, we need to invest in that industry through alternative products and also biofuels. And I do want to believe that it is one of the images that we need to really look into. Yes, South Africa is a water scarce country. It is also one of our highest risks. The drought this year, which allowed 40 to 60% of the industry not to pass cane. And it's something that South Africa has to look at. What happens when we have no more use of water and this water scarce country, something that is the high risk, but it has the potential. Why it makes this way is because it takes our infrastructure. So it is in a low growth potential quadrant and all labor intensive. What makes the required silos? And in my presentation, I did imagine that Chufapos will be able to put up 6 silos. In the technical structure of South Africa today, their silos are only in 30 cases, and all of them have been privatized. So government does no longer own that infrastructure. It is in the private hands. What happens?
Ms. Spears, no, you've got 3 minutes left.
What happens is that without taking our infrastructure, we can no longer grow a particular sector. But with the enterprise that you hear from today, you will see that growth potential will change because of our investment in technical infrastructure. And then the fourth question came from Honorable Kalako, and I thank you for the positive response to our work. And I do think, again, I think the key question is the aquaparks. We're working very closely with them. DG and Minister have committed to the Bank of Aquaculture contribute with our new incentive, Critical Infrastructure Fund, that we put the parks infrastructure in all the 27 parks. It's something that is ongoing and working in collaboration with them. In terms of the question that came from Honorable Ed Mason, the 24 aquaparks, as I said, 6 industry traditional leaders, so we will ensure that they evolve. It is a space that we work in many other areas in South Africa, and we've got the potential to make it available. And then lastly from Ms. Bob, Honorable, I do think some of your questions are key, in particular the labeling. When you sell bulk wine to the world, it goes into a blend like tea, and it is difficult then to determine where the origin of that wine comes from. So what we ask the industry, if it's between 80% South African, we want them to machine it, because the majority of the wine is. So they buy it in bulk and blend a little bit with our competitors, Australia or Chile or whatever, and then the whole bottle tastes so nice, but it doesn't say South Africa. So what we've requested is to say, when you do a wine blend, do mention where the wine is, but they're not obliged to, but you can ask, and they've said, okay, if it's majority South Africa, we don't have a problem to say most of this wine is coming from South Africa. On MSAP, Finisher is an initiative that is structured with MSAP. It's something definitely that we're looking at. Not just Finisher, but also caskets. The casket industry is a very big industry, and we import a lot of caskets. So Metro Mill, it is a new project, and in terms of Louis Draper, Ian Moore will give us a better presentation. We started the project in 2012, and DDI will contribute $50 million towards that project. And the total project is a couple of 200 million so, but my colleague from the industry will give the better presentation later. Thank you, Chair.
And as Chief Director, you've really given us a lot of good news. And one of the most important ones was when you said we were a net importing country. And now that shifted our food. And I think that piece of information, that good news, really needs to be a headline in papers. It really does. I mean, to improve our food security, I don't think we realize how valuable it is. And I'm glad to see the graph took us from, what, 2008 or 9. And I would like to see that good news continuing this year and next year. Thank you very much, Chief Director, in that. And with respect to that forestry seminar, we will discuss this in Bangkok, because I think even if we're able to attend for 2 days, Honorable Whip, Larko, that would be valuable. It's an industry with a very long and important value chain, and also a high absorption rate along the bio value chain. All right, so keep us in mind, Chief Director, on that one. All right, now I hope other presenters are as swift and able to
We're now going to deal with FABCOM. We've already heard much good news about you, but perhaps you will be able to give a more detailed input on that. Let's make the changeover very quick. We're going to immediately follow that with Latano Milling, immediately, and then we're going to raise questions after those two. So I hope you're all on board there and all on track. That is FABCOM with Latano Milling. I mean, to hear that FABCOM are already able, seen from what the DTI were telling us, to produce these packages at a lower rate and so on the FABCOM somewhere here, I'm sure, quite a bit about it. Are you ready? Are you ready, FABCOM?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And we have with us here then from FABCOM, we've got, is it Mr. Isiba?
Yes, we're doing the two parts. I'm going to do one part and Alan Saba will do another part.
Right, so that's the Deputy Director, Mr. Isiba. Thank you for coming.
Okay, thank you. Just a correction, I'm the Deputy Resident of FABCOM. And Alan is the General General of FABCOM. Thank you. Thank you very much for an opportunity to come and present this. We'll be talking to you about localization of food production in South Africa, homegrown as a micro maize milling, as a FABCOM initiative. I'm just going to talk to you through just a little bit about what FABCOM is all about, and then Alan will take you to the rest of the presentation. FABCOM is the briefest. It was started in 1988, almost 27 years ago. And at that point in time, if you remember very well, there were lots of uprising in the townships and the rural areas. And also what was also important then was the mostly business people from the township and the rural areas were not participating in the mainstream of the economy. And FABCOM was started to ensure that those businesses are able to participate in the mainstream of the economy. We are one of the four national business chambers in the country. The other one is NAPOC, and the other one is SACOC, what they call it, Society now, and the AHI. There are other business chambers, but I must emphasize that they are more locally based, either they are provincial or they are city-based, but we are actually a national chamber. Our vision is to develop small and medium micro-enterprises in the township and the rural areas. The main issue about us is to bridge the economic divide. If you look at most of the townships, you realize that the economy is unstructured and unorganized, whereas if you look at the other side of the economy, you realize that it's actually structured, it's formalized, they produce annual financial statements on time and all that. So our real mandate is to try and see how we can bridge that divide, that economic divide between the structured and the unstructured economy. FABCOM is a business chamber, and most of people know us of most of our investments, but we are actually a business chamber. It's an unincorporated chamber. It's run by constitutions. We have elections every 3 years. We do have a president, and we have a national advisory committee that is composed of four, the president, deputy president, myself, Alan Campbell, the treasurer general, and the secretary general. Membership is obviously national. We do also have provincial structures that are headed by the provincial advisory committee, the chairperson, the deputy chairperson, the secretary, and the treasurer. The programs that we run, which are, you know, under a certain one, Spring One Company, compose actually of five things that we do for our members. One is access to finance. We ensure that our members are able to access finance because that's one of the key things that drives enterprises. And then business support, access to business support services includes us starting up and registering businesses, helping those small businesses to do their financial statements, cash returns, and so on. Access to markets, what we also going to talk about here is about the farmers who usually do not necessarily have either the skills and also the markets that they need to access. So we help them in accessing markets. And that goes hand in hand with training and development, which does that we also equip them with particular skills that they have to be able to take advantage of the markets that are there. Business opportunities is exactly the same as access to markets. Investments, FAPCOS is headed by a trust. You know, all our investments are under a trust. We also have started another company called Homegrown, which has to do with a food brand in the entire region, just to ensure that our members are participating and that a brand is actually owned by the entire region. BPC Capital and Commodity Trading has to do with what Unati was mentioning, that, you know, silos, if you do the white base, include silos, and if you don't necessarily have silos, it becomes a challenge. And BPC is a commodity trading that ensures that we also in an access to silos. We will be building one of the silos in the Northern Cape, and we're working very closely with other private silos that are there, but it is important that we should also build new silos. Cape Malting House is a company that we formed that has to do with malting stuff, taking barley and processing into malt. And we also do ICP, which is a company called Beltech, and we also run an incubator in micro telecommunication. And Subserve also is another company that has to do with NACOR, NACOR business operations for small enterprises that come up, and we support small businesses that has to do with either you know, producing your financial statements or tax returns, as I mentioned. So it links very closely with business support services on which I mentioned on the programs. And lastly, we want also to, we actually have started another company called Business of Trust, which will support, you know, fully, you know, the growth of small enterprises. Usually big enterprises, they usually have the means and the resources to bring in consultants. But when you look at small businesses, you realize they don't necessarily have the consultants and then some of the resources to be supported and to grow. As the sectors that are represented in FAPCOS is agriculture, and B2B salons, retail constructions, professionals, arts, travel, informal trading, and then clothing and textiles. The spread there is obviously the Gauteng is the biggest one, followed by Free State as the second largest, and then we have Mpumalanga and Limpopo and then Mpumalanga. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip, and good morning, gentlemen. I'll be dealing with the micro-building initiatives directly. In 2008, we commissioned TIPS to undertake research for us because at a time when the price of food was escalating and membership in FAPCOS was asking how small business should be responding to this. So we commissioned research to look into this as well as the increasing price of petrol and energy. And what came from that study was very revealing. The third about food was that all foodstuffs that are consumed in the country are transported in one form or another. And what was even more perplexing at the time was that food is transported by road. So the changes in the price of fuel have a direct impact on changes in the price of food. The second thing was that small businesses, particularly black farmers, are completely excluded from the value chain. The number of black farmers participating in the commercial food industry, you know, it was very insignificant, or at the time was very insignificant. The third thing was that the industry, the food industry in its entirety, is highly concentrated and therefore controlled by a handful of enterprises. And something needed to be done, you know, about this. FAPCOS then adopted an approach, developed an industrial policy out of this, and amongst others adopted, you know, the implementation of what we called at the time a maize law in a box. I'm sure one of the members of the House might know that there was a time when FAPCOS owned Premier Foods 100%. So you know, our knowledge of the industry went as far as to say we need to be able to miniaturize monopolies that exist and create quite a number of enterprises that can serve the food needs of the country. Among other things, we created a company called Homegrown. So all of the agriculture and agro-processing business that's undertaken in Flatbush is done by Homegrown, and Homegrown was given a mandate to look at the entire value chain, which was a recommendation, in fact, that came out of the research that was done, that the entire value chain needs to look at, and that an alternative or alternative value chain should be created. So as things stand today, Homegrown focuses on primary agriculture processing, wholesale as well as retail. And you know, you have detail as to what we do in each of those areas there. We deal with the value chain, the food value chain, from seed to spoon, as one that we put it. In addition, we define the purpose for the micro-milling project as in to contribute towards the development of an alternative value chain for the production of staple food, especially aged meal. The second purpose objective was to localize the production of maize meal and thereby cut down the transportation, production and labor costs that are associated with the production of food. The third one was to empower local SMEs and retailers. Number four, to promote the emergence of black industrialists. And finally, to localize job creation. This, of course, was hinged on our industrial policy program. We borrowed a lot from IPEF at the time, you know, as well, and we were very conscious, as we said out, you know, on this path, that we were catching up to participants in the industry that had been there for a very long time. So we had to be very creative in how we went about it. The team was put together, our partners, that was, of course, with all of the programs for small businesses and the model that it has, Homegrown. We then identified Beulah, which is a Swiss German company based in South Africa, as the technology partner of choice. They are the biggest company in the world that manufactures milling equipment. And also then the marketing and branding, brand development side of things, looked at the appointment of an ad agency called Owen Castle, the Open Ad, as well as a merchandising company called Visual Fusion to provide us with strategic input in as far as those areas are concerned. As far as the public sector is concerned, partnered with the DGI. I think Mr. Spears mentioned earlier that we have a formal MOU with the DGI, which enables members of FEDCOS to access much needed defenses and grants. We also have a strategic relationship with FIFA, through which we are able to access wholesale lending facilities and online, you know, to members, farmers, etc. We also work very closely with the departments of small business development, agriculture, social development, as well as local ministries, provincial departments of agriculture, and the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. Micro-milling technology that we selected, even that we operate largely in towns and rural areas, is a containerized mill. It's the milling technology that is within the container is as good as you find anywhere in the world. The difference is that it's containerized, and as a result, it's a plug-and-play type of technology that can be deployed with relative ease. In fact, it takes a week to 2 weeks to commission and very easy to operate, which are the things that we were looking at when we spoke to Beulah. It doesn't have to be containerized, so you can exclude the container if a building or sort exists in a chosen locality. At this stand, it's a 20-foot container load, one on top of the other, and it constitutes a load that produces 2 to 3 tons per hour. With a 20 to 24 hour operation per day, 6 days in a week, you have 1,000 tons per month, and therefore 12,000 tons in any given year per mill. It took us a number of years to get where we are today, and that's because we had to look at all of the risks that our members would be confronted with, you know, as they embark on this journey of becoming millers, and we had to put in place risk mitigating measures to ensure that they're not unduly exposed. And these are the ones that I'm taking you through now, which are listed as critical success factors. The first one is consistency of supply of quality raw material. I think it was said by an honorable member in the House earlier today that without the raw material, there's no point in milling. So you need to secure maize. And it's not an easy exercise. You know, if it's 1,000 tons per month for one mill, and you have 24 mills, which is what we are targeting, you need 24,000 tons of maize in any given month. And we have to look at ways in which that could be secured. Also, we discovered that even the maize industry is dominated by a handful or a number of large commercial farmers who are actually very good at what they do. Then we looked at storage and logistics, without which it's not possible to get products to market or to get raw materials to milk. And we had to look at the lie of the land as far as silo pest in the country's concerned. And we clearly, identify areas where it would be important to put down silos of our own. But everywhere where a micro-mobility would have, it would have to be within the proximity of an existing silo in order to cut down the cost of transportation. Productivity cost efficiencies, if you have a mill, you have all of the equipment, you have the raw material, the mill does not run well, that would also not mean much. So we have to embark on a program of ensuring that the micro mini businesses are run as successful and sustainable enterprises. The last one is wholesale and retail. You have to be able to get the product to market, to the consumer market. If an industry is dominated by six players, in the main, and you have to find ways of ensuring that you absolutely overcome the barriers attempts that pose such as obstacles there. And the putting in place a formidable or reputable national brand behind which micro millers would be able to push product to market was then an exercise that occupied our time for at least the past 3 years. As things stand today, we have a book, and we have a brand called Homegrown, and I'll show you a little later as to what it entails. We looked at mill locations, spread throughout the country, all three, four mills, with Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and KZN taking up the majority, or at least half of the 24, 12 mills total, Northern Cape 1, Northwest 3, Mpumalanga 2, Limpopo 2, and the Free State 3. Remember that in our case, we facilitate and enable each of these mills that are individually and respectively owned by separate entrepreneurs. So we're looking at 34 individual milling enterprises. The impetus for agriculture and jobs, given the 24 mills and their spread throughout the country, in terms of total tonnage per annum, looking at 28,000 tons of maize meal that will be produced, and that would give you 6% of the total market share, which for the first time would be market share by micro vendors that are completely land owned and operated. Job creation directly 720 in total. On the farming side, on indirect jobs, about 7,300. Ultimately, once all 34 mills are up, we would have accessed 73,000 hectares of land. And if we assume that each farmer owns a 100 hectare piece of land, it would be 730 farming enterprises that would be involved in the initiative. As we stand today, we are contracting out milling, and we're looking for micro-mills that are black run and operated in the main, and the carbon milling is one such mill. We have three on contract, with entire capacity dedicated to us. Location assessment criteria, we don't just plant ourselves at locations, we have a set of criteria that we use. We assess these mills very carefully, or the locations very carefully, so that we don't set members up to fail. From a financial modeling point of view, you're looking at about 13.5 or 13.5 million rands, 13.3 to be exact, to put this up in the container range. If you were to build a building, it would add about 4 million rands to that figure there. That's what the brand more or less looks like. As we talked about yesterday, it's distributed in Gauteng through 12 independent distributors that we've had to assist as individual enterprises. And we have about 13,000 retailers that have been profiled, in Gauteng that are selling product into the market. I don't know what I would say if I still have a bit more time. Do I?
Thank you very much. That was Mr. Campbell, the Treasurer General. Let me just get these right. Mr. Yusiva, are you the President or Deputy President? The Deputy President of Hapakosh. And Mr. Campbell is the Treasurer General. Thank you very much indeed. Between the two of you, there were about four slides missing, which are always valuable to have, to make notes on.
if you could make this available to Mr. Magema, and Senator Magema, who's the other committee secretary this afternoon. In fact, we've got it right now, so if you could give us a copy of that, it would be helpful. Thank you. And to all of the presenters, it makes it easier to make a difference to slides if they are numbered. And other slides I've got since I've been watching are numbered. Now, that would be very helpful if we had that. All right. Thank you so much. But let's move on immediately, as I indicated, the ask question after Matama Milling. And let's hope we've got Matama Milling correctly noted here. Is that Mr. Ngaba, Chief Executive Officer? Is that correct? Good. Right. A third time lucky. We have Chief Director title wrong, you see. Now we know what it is. Right, so I'll speak to the necessary staff. The Tabo Milling, I mean, that SAPCO story is very exciting, thank you. And on the Tabo Milling, we're moving across the, are you ready? Right, thank you very much. Who's making the presentation? Yourself, right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And all the honorable members and my colleagues from British Kingdom. My name is Kolani Zada. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Letabo Milling. Just about Letabo Milling, Letabo Milling has been erected since we actually started trading in June last year when we took over the plant that we bought in Sandefell. We are three directors, that is myself, Mr. A. Morris, and my wife, Kemi Zaba. The company resume, and just a short resume about myself. I owned my first business when I was about 8 years old, and fruits of the Soweto trade up until I completed matric. And today I see myself owning this big business, which is the Letabo Milling, which is a new player within the milling industry. About Letabo Milling, we the first 100% black gold, and get me attended by the records that we checked also by GTI. And we positioned in the market in the same competitive level as industry main players on price, product quality, and customer service offering. We've created 44 jobs in Vector's Rec that were not there. When we took over the plant, the plant had 40 employees, and we upscaled them by 40 jobs. We have an offtake agreement with MESMAS, and that has enabled us to access funding from APSA through their enterprise development.
We do want to hear everything you've got. If you could just move the mic a little. I have the same problem, actually. I'm used to speaking at rallies. I have to remember I'm here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if I'm audible now. Okay, thank you. Okay. We do have an offtake agreement with MESPAT, which we signed through their large development fund when they merged with Walmart, and we've also signed up another offtake agreement with United National Brewers, and also as well now recently with FarmCos as I've mentioned, looking at giving us about 15,000 tons or so per year that will mill off at home crown. We also apply the general trade as part of our route to market strategy. Our reason to enter the market was actually to correct the economic situation in Algeria after the apartheid era. And what we looked at was that of all the mills that were producing maize meal in South Africa, none of them were black owned. So that gave us an opportunity to see that there was a market that we could also enter. And also, what we wanted to increase the choice of buyers in terms of the products that are available in the market, even though we knew that we were going to be competing with the well-established companies. Our vision is to be one of the top performing South African owned milling companies in 5 years of our existence in terms of commercial performance, organizational performance, and also creating sustainable social development.
our mission is to consistently provide high quality products, in that we already have a lab in our plant, and we actually have gone through the food safety audit, the FSSC audit, and that is why our product is available at Microsoft. The long-term objective for us is to build a modular plant whereby we can employ more people and be able to have more volume that we can supply food to our customers. And hence we have applied GTI for our expansion in terms of the effort and grants that they have. Today we've been invited to come and give input on the following issues around development and implementation of a small-scale main-to-million program embedded in a franchising business model, the introduction of a support program to facilitate market entry of small-scale maize mills, the development of a skills development program in collaboration with the food and beverage sector, education and training agency. I think this we got from the brief letter that was sent to us. Now, if we look at the support for small-scale millers that is required, look at the imperatives, we look at the imperatives, dependencies, the support that's provided, and also which stakeholder provided the support. We look at where to play and how to play in terms of the imperatives. That's imperative number one. And then we look at the dependency on that market stress, or based on market stress, and the business case that we present. The support was provided in terms of the backdrop of research data, the gap analysis, in terms of the market area, product segmentation, and profit pools. And the stakeholder that supported us in terms of the innovation was through the innovation training by NESMAT and AFSA through their EV program. In fact, the NESMAT EV program is run through the Institute of Business Science, and the last I attended the top course, and I was voted as a top student during that. Now, we looked at the imperatives. Imperative number two is around issues around startup capital. It was the NESMAT Gates Enterprise Development Program. We had the first one that was started last year, and the second one is already running now. And you have good results. The next question is about startup capital. I mean, if you look at our business case that we provided as well, it helped us as well around gearing for business and also to look at our margin analysis. I mean, as Ms. Munaj has stated earlier that, if you look at our price management, we could have cheaper than the top rate in the country. The next one was around plant machinery, and I think that's where now we're looking at the expansion in terms of our getting our business to the next level, because we need to create more capacity for us to be able to deliver more to our customer base, which is actually increasing. So that's why we approached GDI, and then we'll be able to apply to them to action. Self-development. We partnered with the National Chamber of Milling so that they can transfer skills and train our people, because at this stage we know that there's very few who know black millers for the matter. Currently, we have only one miller in the country who happens to be our black manager. So subsequent to that, I've enrolled six people. White. It's a white miller. Subsequent to that, I've enrolled six of my employees to go through the milling program through the National Chamber of Milling. The other imperative is around grain procurement and supply. The price fluctuation through NSEP, especially now with the grants that we just held, in recent months, which are actually driven the price of white maize to levels that we haven't seen before. So we found that with the help that we're getting from upside in the market, we are able to be able to price ourselves still to within the market.
Good time to interrupt you. As you can see, we have got a full gallery. I haven't seen the gallery this full with
high schoolers for a long, long time. And it does seem that FedEx, you know, our neighboring brothers and sisters, in this case Swaziland, are really here to visit South Africa, but in particular, Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, because this is where we make legislation and process policy. Now for the Kabois High School, you're very welcome. You're actually present listening to a very important aspect of the Industrial Policy Action Plan, the agricultural side. And you may have yourself experienced food shortages and how to ensure that we keep food sustainable and overcome scarcity. And the presenters here come from trade and industry, Chief Director Spears, and also the presenters are from the, the business and industrial and manufacturing sector. You've got Fabcos here, and we actually have Fabcos with Fabcos there. We've got the president of Fabcos here, President Yusiba, and Mr. Campbell, the Treasurer General. We also have Natabo Milling, Mr. Ngaba, Chief Executive Officer, who's speaking currently, who started off selling fruits on the trains and then educated himself. And now he owns his own company and no doubt will be one of the major players in the milling industry, made milling. And I think what we find, and also here with us, is SACAN, it's a Tampa FAS, the South African Fruit and Vegetable and Cannabis Association here. And from that grouping, I'm looking to see for the names here, Ms. Atwood Palm, Ms. Dawson, and Mr. Hoon. And Il Molina Milling, Mr. Essak. So all of these people are here ensuring that not only South Africans, but Africans in general are able, throughout our continent, to overcome food shortages. This is a very, very important presentation for our country and the rest of Africa, because we're all trying to ensure that we get economic freedom in every aspect. All right? And you're very welcome. Thank you. Back to yourself, then. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we move forward on this slide, this is where we saw the support that we've received so far in terms of our candidatures. As I said earlier, only it took us forward to access funding while I was working on the project, when it was tough for us to access funding up until 2014 when we were able to access funding. If you look at the next slide, where we talk about current industry chain structure, where it shows that it favors the established players. I mean, they control the market access, the value chain, price, economics, and access to unprocessed produce. I mean, if we look at this, you'll find that farmers with farm maize, ideally, we would like them to sell directly to millers. At times it happens, but it happens on a small scale. But you find that the maize goes to the cooperatives, who in turn will sell it to the commodity traders, and they're the ones that determine the price for traffic. And then after you find that from us, then that it goes to retailers. So if we short circuit that, then we'll be able to ensure that the improvement that the maize farmers would be able to sustain their business. And we also, as producers or better processors into maize, we will be able to better improve our margins. If you look at our road structures, when we
start to carry on, just explain your point here about millers are also subjected to the industry structured dynamics.
Okay.
Or structural, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, if I want to buy maize today, I have to go through a trader who in turn will get it from a cooperative. And then he has had his own margin.
Why do you have to?
It's the way the industry is structured. Because they are able to negotiate better prices
as opposed to being buying benefits from the company. And I think that's where now we need to really look at how we can revamp the parts of the procurement of the Navy. Because that's currently what we are experiencing. And actually with the current high prices that we're experiencing now, it's really like affecting our margins. Thank you, manager. If you look at our road success, it hasn't been a bad approach, but we were determined to achieve our goal and ensure that in our region we're able to enter the market. There are many barriers in terms of entering the market. One is that you've got well-established brands in the market, and no one will look at the very few people who take a chance, like Nesna, have done. And I think that could have been maybe precipitated by the fact that, you know, the agreement they had, Walmart had, when they came into the country, that they have to support SMEs, particularly that supplier, and that's how we managed to get it right. However, we were able to produce a quality product, and we went through a rigorous quality testing program up until we were able to get through our food safety FSSC audit, and then that our product was able to be accepted by the stores. And we are proud to say we received a food safe product. And I mean, Fabco had attested before we signed an okay agreement with them, they came to check our plant and found that it was food safe, and they are able to buy from us. There's also issues around the level of capital. In terms of that, you go to financial, the first thing they want is an off-take agreement. Now, you wonder as to how, where will you get an off-take agreement when you haven't even produced a single bank arrangement. And that affects us a lot. But, you know, we were able still to get over that through the off-take agreement, though it took us 4 years to get that off-take agreement from last month. And I think with that in mind, we are glad that we created 40,000 jobs. And also with the upcoming growth plan that we have, wherever we apply for MSAP, we're looking at adding an extra 40 jobs as well to further decrease or maybe decrease the unemployment rate in the region where we operate. Yeah. I think looking at the development of the mini franchise business model, we look at about four elements, and we look at element models and benefits. The development of which now big supply chain, and we look at the recruitment of farmers with off-take agreements with regional millers. What we've done now is we've already started to millers around the Brooklyn area through the Department of Agriculture, because last, I think, about 2 Fridays ago, I was invited to a business event where I was a dairy speaker, and from there we were able to elect some land farmers who said they got the land, but they stopped planting maize because they've got no money. So I went to them and said to them, look, I'll buy all your maize, provided you receive set quality parameters. That would be able. So I'm meeting them next week to finalize that so that we finalize that in time before we get into the next planting season of maize. Now, with that in mind, it would have spin-offs or opportunities that job creation by those farmers. And the land that has been given to them, greener land that has been given to them, they'll be able to utilize it so that they can earn a living out of it. We also look at capacity building. That has to do with if we were to franchise around the country and we create small millers within those areas. If you look at the model earlier on that I had put up, where it shows that the maize move from the farmer right directly to the miller, thereby increasing margins and also creating better jobs, because we find that, you know, that land is just arable land but not utilized because people feel that they cannot sell, because what happens when they go to those big cohorts, there's issues around pricing as to like what price, what amount would they pay or what value would pay for the land that is sold to those cohorts. So those are the things that we think we can address as well. I'm also looking at saying, with that program, we can put together a sales incubation program, mentoring and upskilling program, and ensure that those things are viable. Based as well on our experience with the partnership that we have with NASPAD, GIF, and also with the Department of Trade and Industry, partnering with us and also with the National Chamber of Living. I think, as I said, the challenge we face with small members is around access to finance, grain procurement, and also access to established retailers, because you have to go through a rigorous quality inspection program. Now, it's not an easy program, it can take you anything from 6 to 8 months, because when we started, we had, for 8 months, we were not producing. We were just trying to test how we had, because you first have to commission the plant, then commission the plant. After commissioning, we had to test and for quality purposes, and we waited for 8 months before we actually started, before we were greenlighted to go through, because we had to negotiate the quality requirements. And you know, there's a huge margin. The main thing, industry is a low margin industry. So when you go in there, you really need to know your story. I mean, as Ulati and Abuja, we seek to address the high price of food through our innovative way of running the plant, but at the same time, creating jobs. Yeah, and this was me now as presenting to the other board. Some of the members were from the Barclays, telling them my story, my journey as to how I got to them and into investing for this project. It was at their newly opened last year, at their newly opened GE sector in Johannesburg. Yeah, and this is the Tabasco Foundation. This is our quality product, which we're looking at making the flagship of the South African main mills within the 5 years of our operation. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief Executive Officer and Owner, Mr. What's the first name? Okay. I'll try and keep that up and improve on our pronunciation. Now, you can stay where you are. We've got SAPCOS, right? Members, you've got SAPCOS just sitting there at the back. I think there'll be an opportunity for some questions. So you'll be able to address them both, indicate if it's both of them or one of them, and indicate who it is. So we now got just 15 minutes for the questions, comments, and response. Let's see by show of hands, and we have some. Honourable Mkongi, Honourable Cornell, Honourable Hester Hayson. Those three, can we please keep that at 2 minutes each?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. Captain, when we received the presentation from the TTRU, I think all members were impressed on the matter of the percentage change between imports and exports. Of course, assuming the contract is there. Because they are raising an issue, that's fundamental, that in terms of the market share in South Africa, they are unable to beat them. So now I'm looking at whether the domestic market is not favorable to our own small and medium enterprises as compared to foreign market, given your equation in terms of the percentage change to the imports and the exports. But that is one. And I'm impressed about all the presentations, particularly from SAPCOS, that they support IPAC. Alternative value chain issue that is supporting IPAC, localization of the production that is IPAC, empower local SMEs, promote emergence of labor strategies, that is IPAC. However, I'm interested to know, because some of our new labs and equipment, where did you get this equipment? Break down the equipment, you spoke about mechanical and electrical. South African, what is South African? What is the guarantee? Because if we talk about localization, we also talk about what is the machinery that you use, whether they are from South African. So, they'll break that for me. The last one goes to me for London. I'm just interested, you know, do you find it easy or difficult to partner with Shadow Detention than overseas partners? I mean, you spoke about Mashmat and Mashesh. You see, are they South African or they are coming from the States? And then, was it easy for you to do business in their tradition, do business in South Africa? Because you have to be an issue that the conferences, they put price as a barrier to the entry. They put issues of off-trade as a barrier to the entry. So you find that South Africans are more hostile to put this like economic empowerment than other people. We can partner with their people here in South Africa from outside. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. One to PEMCOS. I want to know whether you've got any investments in the wine industry. I know they're not making much money if you're a wine farmer, but I think there is a real need for PEMCOS to look at that, and I think there are very good wine farms or wine industries coming on the market that's definitely looking for a PEMCOS component. And then on to the Kabul money. I hear what you say, and obviously if you could cut out the middleman taking his share of you will make more money, or even the farmer will make more money. But my question to you is, how will you do quality control? Because, you know, maize also goes in certain categories, and if it's in a co-op, everybody share the not so good quality, but you still get money for it. So I just want to know if you've got a direct channel, how will you do quality control?
Thank you, Honourable Colonel. Will you turn that mic off, please? Yes, Honourable Jessica Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can just maybe mention that you know, I really think that members should receive reports a bit of you know, before the meeting, come here and I'm actually running blind. But with that, of course, I find that the idea of running small malls or very good, or a competition, the rollout of say 24 micro malls can reduce the price of meal, for example, by 37%, I think that's what I claimed. That's affordable, but I've seen that's not financially viable. In fact, I've read it from in a financial plan that FATCO has taken, they closed three out of their seven chambers already through their financial difficulties. And how they rectified it, by running a deficit of more than 900 million rand, if my figures are correct, this is not easy to overcome with civil bailout. And I don't think FedWest actually implement into FedCo. It's my opinion that this heavy-handed policy from the Department of Trade and Industry, or the application of the policy, is actually doing more harm than good. A lot of those questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just have a few questions myself. One I noticed was with the milling, the Thabo milling, which was here moments ago that I had. And you mentioned, I think it's a German company here, you showed some diagrams, and I wondered what they were doing there. Do you have a partnership with them at all? Buchler originates from Germany. What is the what's your relationship with that particular company? Again, I am concerned about, now last DTI, we're going to be, I mean, taking this up with you in a written question to yourself, as well as to all of the presenters here. What are these industrial structural challenges you're facing in not being able, you know, in finding the price is increased? You know, along this line, so that the end result is a higher cost product instead of making it more competitive. In other words, without adding any value to the product, it's going up in value. And why? So that's
going to be a written question for all of you, and it relates to a question I asked the Tava Living Company. FABCOS was just a separate one here. And what would be regarded as a small mill? You mentioned the 16,000 tons. You spoke about the 16,000 ton mill. One of you made the presentation already, and you indicate that there is a small mill per se, and that we've already heard, and DTI will keep this in mind, that Kabusa had either closed down, liquidated, or sold their share. And the reasons given to the public were that they couldn't, there wasn't the volume for the small mill. Now, we'd like to know why it is that other small mills then are succeeding, and it may be in relation to the tonnage that the various mills here, milling companies, say they are dealing with. So, DTI, if we could give that unpacked, the reasons for the failure of Kabusa, the reasons for the success of other small milling companies as well, seeing as this is the route that we are going to go in that direction. Thank you very much. So over to whoever gets their hand up first out of those two presenters. Yes, thank you, FABCOS.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question posed by Honourable Komi about small business participation in the milling industry. I think what you stated was that once all 24 micro mills are up and running, they will constitute 6% of the super major milling industry in our country. And as things stand today, and attested also by Richard Milling, we do not have black-owned micro mills in the country. And with the 24, you would have 6% for the first time ever in the history of our country. That's what we meant. The second issue about the equipment suppliers and whether the equipment is South African or not, the process we embarked upon was to look at technology suppliers that were approved by the DTI, and there were two that were available, and out of the two, we worked actually with both, and eventually settled for one of the two. Bula is a Swiss-German country, a company that has operated in South Africa since the 70s. So they have manufacturing facilities in the country. It is not, in our opinion, advisable, for instance, to use Bula for things like silo equipment, you know, the steel work, etc., that goes with that. In our view, the roller mills, you know, the roller that grinds the maize, is what we prefer them for. We have an option with Bula that we're also using called Rothmills, which is a South African company. Located in Kroonstad as well. To Honorable Kornoff, any investment in the wine industry, I'll ask the Deputy President of FABCOS, Philip, to just deal with that one, please.
Thank you. Obviously, we don't necessarily have investments there, but it's something that we can do. We do have members in the Western Cape that are involved in the wine industry. But I think from a FABCOS perspective, we haven't actually prioritized it. Maybe it's something that we really have to look at. Our AGM is coming now, towards the end of the year. I think it's something that we propose and look into.
We would appreciate, Honorable Gurnoff, perhaps pointers from yourself. Just understand exactly what you also meant and what was the question. The question from Honorable Theatre Hazen, 3 out of 7 chambers closed. We know that there was a media article about that. FABCOS is one chamber. We only have one. You know, we are one chamber in FABCOS. There can't be more than one. There's never been more than one. And we tried as much as we could to correct, you know, the media statement, which was actually incorrect. So it's actually incorrect. About FABCOS and the deficit of 900 million. When we owned Premier Foods, when we bought the company, it was in fact 900 million rand in the red, you know, close to bankrupt. And it took us 5 years to turn the company around, you know, into a profitable situation before we sold it off. And FABCOS was the vehicle, the special purpose vehicle that was used at the time. As things
as today, we no longer have that. That doesn't exist. We may have served the purpose at the time. Honorable Chair, the Beulah issue, I think we raised the question of Beulah, and I think I spoke about earlier when I responded to Honorable Nkongi's question, that it's a Swiss German company that, you know, manufactures leading technology around the world, and they are one of two that we currently use. It's called Rothmans. They operate out of Kronstadt, and they are a South African company. The question also was, what is a small bill? In a living industry, 2 to 3 tons per hour is constitutes a small bill. And the mills that we are looking at, on average, produce between 2 to 3 tons. And whether it's 2 or 3 or anywhere in between depends on the productivity of the mill in question. And we were indicating that, you know, operating at 24 hours per day, you would end up with a little bed size with about 1,000 tons per month. Therefore, 12,000, not 16,000 per year. Yeah, on the issue of risks and why other people are closing, our contribution to that would be that there are many risks that confront small-scale millers as they enter industry. They have to contend with logistics, as we indicated. They have to contend with raw materials. They have to look at running this new mill, something that they do for the first time, and then at the same time, they have to look at getting product to market. What we offer them as staff course is a situation where we take away many of those headaches initially. For instance, we provide guaranteed offtake to the market so that they don't have to worry about, you know, access to markets. And the way we do that is by providing retailers that are members of staff course and non-members understand where they are, whether they'll be interested in the product or not, before we even, you know, contract a miller to produce, you know, make new for a homegrown brand as such. I think I also indicated earlier that it took us years to get to this point because there are many risk mitigating measures that we had to put in place. Among others, the consistent supply of raw mills, you know, in addition to just establishing the market on the back of a proper brand. There is a proliferation of smaller brands, and we would work very hard, you know, to ultimately get to a situation where we have critical mass around homegrown and a brand which is owned by the value chain itself. All the millers, the farmers, etc., that contribute towards its perpetuation. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. Would you like to add to that another milling and try the responses?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a question that has been posed to me by Honorable looking at your question where you asked whether it's easier for us to deal with the foreign-based companies as opposed to local-based companies or South African companies. In my 25 years of experience in the FMCG industry, ranging from manufacturing right up to sales, marketing, and go-to-market, which is commonly known as distribution, yes, you would find that at times it's a balancing act as to like from which angle do you look at it. Because with the mass market group, before they were taken over by Walmart, I have dealt with them before, and whereby I was sales manager after moving from manufacturing. So I have already established relationships, and that enabled me to be able to speak to them. Whereas they are competitors. We're not too keen to look at me. However, when the supply development program was started with the arrangement of Walmart, it made it much, much more easier because they had funds available to disperse towards ensuring that projects like ours were able to be enabled to enter the market. But in a nutshell, it does become difficult because those companies are not friendly towards us because without giving you any assistance in terms of developing the product, but they would want you to have a quality product which is their standard. And in fact, that, as I mentioned earlier, was barrier to entry, a problem in terms of accessing those machines. And it would not be easy to go to a competitor and say to them, can you please manufacture this for me and expect to see what happens then?
Thank you.
but we've been able to overcome that through the, I think most of the companies now have moved the way of the enterprise development. And that is why I'm sure with our emergency we will see more companies coming in now who are going to be assisted whereby they can be assisted through grants and ensuring that their production facilities are able to meet those required minimum standards. And then also that we have spoken to the competitors or their opposite numbers, and they were not too keen on working with us, though I won't mention names this speech. I think in terms of the next question from Honorable Escalator, the franchise agreement, as you said, like if I sign an option agreement with those farmers, how am I going to do quality control? In terms of our FSSC certificate, is that I need to get independent quality inspectors to go and audit them. So those facilities where they be stored as to whether it will be labeled, whether it meets the minimum quality requirements. And this is why now we're having a discussion with the Department of Agriculture in the fisheries to lay down our requirements for us to be able to sign off that off-take agreement. Because I think that when I receive the mail, it will be within those food trade standards so that I can be able to process it into mainstream.
Right, thank you very much. What I'll be asking all of you to come back in 19-4 is, looking at the figures that you've given us and so on, I've done a little calculation based on a 40-hour week. The TARB is talking about 16,500 tons per annum, and on the earlier question, that small mill would produce 2 to 3 tons an hour. And that is 8.6 tons an hour. So on the basis that a small mill is 2 to 3 tons an hour, and I presume you don't work 7 days, you work factory hours, that's a 40-hour week. Then you're looking at quite a large mill. Now, is this a large mill then, the one in Centersburg? Centersburg in the Free State producing 16,500 tons per annum, based on the fact that you closed for 2 weeks of the year, and there are at least another 5 days of public holidays, 5 or 6. So I'm just looking at that. Would you describe that then as a medium mill or a large mill? I want to get some understanding of this. Don't respond now. I'd like GDI to get analyze some of that information. What is a small mill? What's a small mill produce in an hour? How many hours do you work in a week? Or are you working flat out, suckling the early Stalinsky thing under Stalin, where you just about kill the worker? What are your hours? What are your conditions of work? And is that a small, a medium, and a large? What can we expect a large mill to produce, a medium mill, and a small? Because this is not our field. We're trying to get a feel for it. And then you go along to the fact that it's in the Free State. One is very impressed. Does that mean the Free State becoming free? That, you know, it's freer than it was. You said you persuaded farmers who stopped growing mealies. Isn't that what you were saying? To start regrowing mealies so that you could produce maize. And I think that that's quite an accomplishment to persuade a farmer to start growing maize again. Anyway, the story so far has been good news with some questions. We're going to have a very short tea break. I'd like you to really just take a cuppa and come back. We want to start sharp at 11:25. Thank you.
I think we can start the chapter in this now.
going to get from rejection just around. So we'll be having that. I think now we're going to get a presentation from Molino or Molino. Yes.
Can you hear me? Thank you, Honorable Minister. My company is called Il Molino Specialty Pens. We are based in Johannesburg. It's too long, I'm too close. We basically, the only non-white, small-scale wheat milling company in the country. We founded in 2006, humble beginnings. We faced basically the same difficulties that most part of the anti-competitive environment experiences, but we sort of, we tore through it, and we started with the production of about 500 tons a month, which is essentially almost like a 1.25 tons of wheat processing an hour. And since then we've grown to do 2,500 tons a month, which is approximately 4 tons an hour at the moment. The Madam Chair previously was mentioning working hours. We currently work 5.5 days a week, and we work three shifts so that as possible get the 45-hour working hours and the adequate time off. We based ourselves in Johannesburg primarily for the reason of being close to our market. We supply the small bakeries, confectioners, biscuit factories, and 95% of our product is sold within a 60-kilometer radius. In 2006, when we started, we had 10, full complement of 10 staff members. We now have 55. So those are basically the pictures of the mall. This is the second expansion pictures. The first expansion pictures, we expanded in 2011. Before that, we were a much smaller plant. We've now moved into a more traditional processing plant, as opposed to being a micro mall, so to speak. We launched our branding called the Baker's Dream, Rise and Shine, Baker's Dream. It's basically the first non-white wheat milling product available. I mean, my gentleman before us, the problems here were in maize production, wheat production. The process is very different in that the process itself is a bit more complicated, the machinery is a bit more expensive, the barriers to entry are higher, and at the same time, it's more complicated and get different grades of wheat that we need to use to create different qualities of flour. So this is something that we've learned over our 10 years, almost 10 years in business, and it's something that we have mastered, and as we will come later on in slides, we'll see we have similar sort of difficulties and issues that our partners also have. To put in perspective, on the wheat side, I know we've been talking a lot about maize, but on the wheat side, what we're going to say is that we consume about 2 million tons of wheat a year. Effectively, our local production is 40% of that only. And when I started the milling in 2006, we were effectively producing about 60%. It's now dropped to 40%. This is the only, call it raw material, where local production has declined. And that is mainly because of the growth in other commodities like soybeans and maize, where the yield per metric ton on the farms much higher. So as a result of that, the farmers have decided that they rather plant maize or soybeans where there's much higher yields. Also, the profitability is better. As a result of this, we have become net importers of wheat now in South Africa. So this is what we need to look at. We spoke to the DGI about it as well. So that's the same reason why at the end of the slide we'll explain to you about our new partnership with International Trading House for that reason. The main production reason for wheat is the Cape and the Free State. If you get the quality of our wheat when it is grown in South Africa, it's excellent. And this is now basically been ascertained after years of digging. And our bowl basically wheat from Australia, Russia, Ukraine, Brazil, Argentina, American, Canadian, German. And wheat that is grown in Cape Town has the best characteristics. So if we can promote the growth locally, and if we can promote the planting of the wheat locally, it will make a massive difference to the industry. And as a result of that, I mean, the government has implemented a duty on the imports of wheat. Okay, it's helped to an extent to encourage the farmers to plant more locally, but at the same time, it's driven the price of flour up because Russia and Brazil and Argentina have massive crops and they're quite ability. So, although it's put up our price of our inputs and protected the local farmers, we still need to speak to the local producers and encourage them to plant. So, that means that maybe we can work with FedCos and the other partners. We can maybe engage with some farmers on promoting the planting of wheat. Wheat milling in South Africa dominated by the four large players. Everyone is basically familiar with them, the Tiger, the Pioneer, Premier, and Food Corp. The barriers to entry, specifically in wheat milling, is a bit higher. It's a bit higher than maize milling because the equipment is much more specialized. We have to do conditioning of our wheat. We have to gently grind our wheat, and then we can't hammer the grain profusely, producing the baking characteristics of it. As a result, you need equipment that is a bit more technologically advanced, a bit more specialized, but not just one thing, a wheat milling from China. It doesn't work. The simple reason is it needs to handle the grain more gently and to provide a better quality. And that's one of the main barriers of entry. One of the main problems that a small wheat miller is because of this. But the simple reason is they can't compete against the 15, 20 million US dollar plants that the big millers are putting up. Especially the quality is much better. There is a massive need in the wheat milling sector to promote small milling, small medium milling on the wheat side. The margins are also a bit tight, but at the same time, there is a need for us, especially a non-white component, especially a BE component, and especially more closer to our markets. For example, in being situated in Johannesburg or situated in, not necessarily in a rural area, but outside a rural area, you can have adequate power and water. But basically, this opportunity and hence the reason for the IPAP, and also one of the same reasons why we've been expanding to the best of our ability. Looking at the challenges in the industry, especially on the wheat milling side, quite actually, to an extent, mirrors what my friends at the flour milling have been experiencing. But I'd like to sort of put my own foot on it as far as wheat milling is concerned, so that we can basically get a broad picture of all the challenges, so to speak. I mean, over the 9 years, 9.5 years that I've been milling wheat and supplying flour to bakeries, confectioneries, biscuit factories, one of the main issues we started off with was the price fixing issue. It helped us to an extent that the prices are much higher than what consumers should be paying, so it allowed us to enter. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, because the bigger millers had much more capacity, they could target me, for example, in a smaller area. So we could only supply wheat flour within the Johannesburg CBD area. Now for a Pioneer or a Tiger, for them to lock their prices in my area was very easy because they were averaging out the higher prices in another area. And I experienced that over 12 to 18 months, sometimes 24 months, where I would just about break even and even lose a bit of money just to keep my head up about it so that I would wait for this to be cycle to end. Where actually I would buy wheat at a better price, or for example, they could get an extra loan from a bank just to keep myself going. So that was one of the emphasis that the bigger millers engaged on. The other issue with them is that also, I mean, one of the major challenges is we've got a small plant, our quality might not be as superior to this, but over the years we sort of improved upon that. We've invested in machinery, we've invested in good quality skills, so it's helped us in getting our quality better. But to put it, for example, if you saw in the previous slide, if you look at these tanks, if you look at it, it all looks well, but it's quite it's drawn up, it's photoshopped. But to create almost like call it a block or a brick of flour, you need a specific type of machine called a Ruima or a Ipopec. These machines start off at about 3.5-4 million rand. Now for a small miller or medium miller to get access to this equipment is practically impossible, especially on startup. I mean, the bank won't finance you unless, as my partners mentioned, without an offtake agreement or some sort of collateral or some sort of security, they won't just finance you. So you have to almost build yourself up. Whereas the bigger millers, they've got access to this equipment, and from the beginning, it looks more presentable, even the quality might be the same as yours. The grain storage is another issue, which we mean we've all been experiencing, and the procurement of the deer. It's the same issue. You can't buy from the farmers, you have to buy from baiters. And with wheat, it makes it even more difficult, because wheat essentially use 3 to 4 different grades of wheat, which you blend, in order to make the optimum quality of flour, or the most efficient make of flour. So you're balancing, and different grades of wheat come at different prices. So a co-op, for example, will keep our B1 wheat, a B2 wheat, a B3 wheat. And sometimes if you're asking for a B2 wheat, they don't balance you those qualities. Then I'll close it to you as B1 if you don't need it. It's as simple as that. So without having the grain storage, and without having the procurement sort of systems in place that the big millers have, you're already disadvantaged. So over the years, we've had to come to an issue. It's come to a point where we've had to pull up a relationship with a trading house to help us in this procurement and the storage. And that'll come to my at that point of basis. I'll come back to that point in the last slide with who we are partnered with regarding the regulators' commodities. So the grain storage is almost like a sore point. The challenge that a small and medium may have is that we need to prop our own storage and effectively buy from the farm directly and offer to put it into our silos, where we guarantee our quality and our pricing and almost our deliveries. In the last 10 years, there's been easily close to 100 times where I haven't seen my wheat on time. My mother had to stop, my staff had to go home. Sometimes I tell them I'll be waiting around for a truck. We are at the mercy of the big infrastructure and the big ships that are set in place. And almost since then, say, we are small, medium, miller. It's fine to deliver reaches there on Monday as opposed to Saturday. It's fine to deliver reaches there on Wednesday as opposed to Friday. It's fine to, if you receive a B4 wheat as opposed to a B2 wheat. Now, a B4 wheat has low protein characteristics. We can't mill it to make bread, for example, with it. So we almost start using something that we don't need, sometimes using something that we have a choice but to use. So these are the goals that we've overcome in the last 9 to 10 years. The access, I would say the biggest challenge I've faced in the last 9 to 10 years is my access to working capital. The ECI has been excellent in providing us rebates and incentives on our actual capital and our capital investment in our equipment. We've got back 25-30% through all the schemes, 15% sometimes. But the biggest hurdle in this sort of business is working capital. For us to move, let's say 1,000 tons of wheat, we need to finance 2,000 tons of wheat because our customers sometimes take 30 days to finance. Based on that, the co-ops want nothing less than cash from us. They want to finance us for day. Before the truck leaves their silo, we have to pay money to the bank accounts. With that in place, I'm sure my father will echo the same point. But so we have almost get our credit lines in place before we even start. There's no one willing to give us a leeway, there's no one willing to give us a free ride, there's no one willing to give us some sort of concession. As a result, working capital is an issue. We've approached the IDC, we've approached banks. The main point in our slide is that I think 3 or 4 years ago, the Competition Council fined the 4 big millers for colluding on price fixing, and they, I think it was Mini Meal, as well as a few other products. Effectively, that money was sold to the IDC. For us to satisfy the criteria and the risk assessment of the IDC, I mean, I myself, I couldn't make it. And we applied to the IDC, we couldn't get access to those funds, because we were holding short in, let's say, some sort of out of check list of 10, we could only get 8, or maybe 7. There was no issue of, let's, can we work with 9 again? So, sorry, we don't need we can't find you. That was the risk that we faced. As a result, we had to go to the commercial banks, where, as you know, the rates are higher. Collateral is needed, security is needed. We were overpaying on our borrowing rates as well. Based on that, my last question coming up with is, we hope to now access the new IDC funds, right? Which are still, apparently, they're still earmarked, they're still there. They're still available to us at zero interest rates. We hope to secure it in the next 4 to 6 months of the new project that we have. Skill shortage is a major issue in the industry. As my partner mentioned, we don't have any black millers in the country that are qualified. Whatever millers that I have under my care, I put them through the National Center of Milling, the Bain Milling Federation. So I'm constantly training them and putting them through all their bases. 3 of the millers started off with me 6 years ago are now almost qualified, fully qualified millers. Totally in my cross, I haven't taken a hint from them. This is my way of trying to cross back to the industry to say, we need to promote this sort of, we need to promote these sort of, uh, the
these sort of skills, phrases. That comes to my end point with the new part that I am putting up on these labels. I want to speak to the National Center of Milling and this is the relevant studies. I want to run a milling school where I can put through all the relevant people through this school. We've got a milling on check and we can basically put everyone through this through their patients and train them adequately. We will work with the SIDA and the NCU on that. On our side, the good point is that we haven't had an issue on sales. For the simple reason is that independent retailers, we come from a background where we've been engaged with independent retailers for the last 20, 30 years in our family or context, that sort of stuff. So sales hasn't been an issue for us. That's one of the main reasons why we have survived. But the other issue, the bottleneck, still comes up with the previous issue that I've discussed. The same retailers are not going to pay us cash for our products. They're not going to look at our product sales. If your product is inferior, we'll still take you on. They're not going to look at that. They're not going to say, listen, we're going to buy more extension from you, but they're simply just going to move off the shelves. So if we engage all the previous challenges, so to speak, we can effectively put the same product on the shelf at a better price, just as good looking as the beginners. So that's basically what we're moving towards. Hence our thought, the marketing and advertising behind our business. The kind of put together deal is another challenge that you're facing at the moment. I mean, to put into this, this has taken 9 years to move from 500 tons to 2,500 a month. And to put together a deal that we now, you know, the greatest commodities, which is a $15 million project, it's taken us almost 3 years. We've been busy with DTR, we worked with the DTR very closely on that. And through their help and their commitment, we were basically close to deal with them as well. So we're hoping to commission in December, of which I'll show you the pictures and the progress reports later on. On a different point, I want to basically see this with all doom and gloom. I want to put it through a slide of the opportunities that are also facing us that we can take advantage of. There are at the moment some specialty flowers being imported. I'm sure you're all familiar with Primi Bianchi, with Doppio Zero. They're all bringing in the double zero flower from Italy at the moment. Containers are being shipped to Cape Town at the moment. We can have the capacity and the expertise to mold that flower here, for example. Another sort of flower is a simple thing like Atta flower. You know, Atta flower is brought in from India and from Dubai in container loads every month. We have the capability of doing it locally. My issue is why do we have to import, but at the same time we need the backing from government, from the relevant organization to help us, to nurture us in the process of setting up the local production. The other issue that other opportunities is just with downstream integration. Downstream integration is very important because, for example, a big mall like Tiger Brand, they manufacture bread, as we all know, Albany bread. At the same time, they have Golden Cloud flour. So they might say, okay, this month or the next 2 months, the next 3 months, we will produce flour at almost a cost price, and then we put our price of bread up. So they, in the division, across the holding company, they will still make the same amount of money because they have a downstream product that they can recoup their losses, so-called on the milling division for. And then one of the strategies that they were working, against other small millers is where they say, okay, for 2 years, we're going to sell wheat flour at cost plus 5% basis, and sort of push the small bit out. They have tried it before. All I have to do is basically some fancy footwork. We keep going around to different areas where we can sell and try to avoid this behavior. Lucky for us is that we've had business actually bakeries and retailers that are willing to support us. So, like I said, we need to also not only look at enhancing the small milling and the medium milling, we need to also look at how we can help the small mill and medium mill also attain vertical integration. How are we going to use our flour into a bakery, into a pasta factory, into a biscuit factory? We need to have some sort of, and I believe that is where the Competition Council money was channeled to the IC for that purpose, but I don't believe there has been any successful disbursements of that fund. My previous colleague touched on the issue of the farmers. Supplying directly to the millers, I think that's a very important point. I'm not going to harbor too much on the point because it's been touched on quite well. We need to get the farmers to supply to us. At the same time, with the specialty powers, we need to engage the farmers to plant wheat that we want. If we can get a farm to plant us durum wheat, we don't need to import our semolina from Italy to make pasta. If you can get our farms to plant a low-grade protein wheat, where we can make our asa flour or roasted flour. We don't need to import that flour from somewhere. So the idea is to work with a farmer or work with a hub where we can get together and almost encourage them to plant the cultivars that we want. So we get more efficiently and as efficient and profitably. Because now we're not at the mercy of the call for it. They tell you, you have to use the B1, which is the most expensive, which happens a lot of the time. They'll send the truck and that's what you have to use. Make it available. The future and the idea of where you want to grow to, as you see from my graph there, wheat demand is already outstripping supply. Hence, we are imports of wheat. We need to encourage our farmers to plant more wheat because our wheat locally, as I mentioned before, is of a good quality. We move wheat from all around the world, and our Western Cape wheat has produced the best results of all.
Just conclude in the next 2 minutes, thanks.
Effectively, what I'm saying is that the future is that we have to work together and collaborate in order to be as efficient as possible and also most optimally as well, as comprehensive as possible. And I'm sure I'd just like to show you the pictures of the new plant that you mentioned to Unati about here. That's effectively these pictures here. We have to figure out a way that's facing the silo complex. That silo complex here is going to host 8,000 tons of raw material. So those are the silo foundations that are coming up at the moment. We are in our construction phase. We want to commission. This is the mold building. As you can see, so we're almost complete. We're handing over to all the mechanical installation team in the next 2-3 weeks. We want to commission these plants by December. This will effectively be a maize and wheat component plant to produce 8,000 tons a month of products. Now, we could not go to this scale relative by doing myself and growing organically. Hence, we had partnered up with a religious commodity, a biscuit factory, a pasta factory, to use their expertise. And we came to the customer using the ASAP program and to derive the benefits thereof. And we basically put this plant up. It's $15 million. We expect to get back about 30 or 40 million rand from the DTR. We haven't put a film in yet. We're still in construction phase, as you can see. Once we commission in December and January, we're putting in our tank. And we are now approaching the IDC for this project as a whole together.
Thank you very much, Mr. Isaac. Thank you. Members, we're going to allow members 2 minutes. Thank you for questions and comments. Right. I show of hands. It is. Yes, Honourable Elders. Honourable Mkombi, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the presentation. You made an interesting point regarding the findings of the Competition Commission and fines that were imposed. And I would like to know what your ideas regarding the fines, where that money must go. I suspect for development of small mill businesses. And Madam Chair, I think that's something that we also need to investigate from our side, although the Competition Commission doesn't fall in our jurisdiction as I used to. But I think it's something that must be investigated.
Thank you. Honourable Mkombi.
Yeah, I know it's very important, Mr. President. I want to support the matter because the strategic framework of government from the 2014 elections, they call it the medium-term strategic framework, said these 5 years should be for radical socio-economic transformation. And then, in the period of 5 years, we are going to be assured by business that within these 5 years and 20 years, structural arrangement of the leading sector is even kept. It's dominated by price fixing, collusion, and lack of action capital. So what we do, I want to suggest that the investigation should be done to this investment or sector. About what are the impediments that have been put in place to frustrate transformation in this particular sector. I want to put that one as a fundamental thing. I want to explain, I know that one in brief. What is the threat of this import from India to the growth of the local in asthma. So those are the two, because I wanted you to send me to the question of the horizontal and vertical integrations in terms of the town, the downstream, you know. But the fundamental one is an official investigation. So that you can write a letter to the chairperson of a portfolio company that deals with the competition commission for investigation in a particular industry. Thank you,
Honourable. Thank you, Honourable. And come here, Honourable Larson.
Three questions. You alluded to the fact that there's a decline in production of wheat in the country, and you have mentioned that the reasons might be that farmers are moving to those who actually have more yields than the meat. What needs to be done to encourage back our farmers to produce wheat again? Those you said why importers now is wheat. And again, I thought that's the question which just honorable member Kogo has asked. Our relationship in BRICS, but I thought Didier can answer this question of BRICS. You know, we have Russia has mentioned China, they are big producers of wheat. India, Brazil, they are with us. Is there any relationship or agreement which we have with them in as far as importation and around prices of this? Again, but seeing the government, they have actually put import duties. But at the same time, I think the negative effect is that it increases prices. What can be done in that? But just as a closing chair, you say that the quality which is produced in the king is a better quality, meaning we have to take or make efforts to encourage the production more, especially here of this in the king. Is it better compared to other countries we have come into which are producing? I think the only thing which faces in all these nations is the problem we inherited a monopoly capitalist system, which is very vicious. So I think that's where the cornerstone is. Whatever efforts on our side as government, I think the fundamental issue is that our economy is highly commercialized, highly mechanized, the high level of product, but highly, highly monopolized. So I think that's what government is trying to grapple with. And it's important to make an interface with you guys who are practically dealing with these problems on a daily basis.
John Clarko, just one also from myself. You mentioned Prinus Yati and Utter Flower. Do they use the wheat that we are growing, or would this require a special wheat? Secondly, if it's not that, does it require special machinery, or can you still use the same machinery, but recalibrate it? Thank you. Now, if you would take those responses in just 5 minutes, thanks.
Thank you, Manager. Regarding the fine money from the King Channel, so I believe it's been given to the IEC. From the people that have spoken to the IEC, they haven't earmarked it to anyone where the project has, so to speak, satisfied the relevant criteria. I think money is still there. I'll tell them Tuesday which time when I apply for this new project. But that's basically the money that I want to target to use as working capital for this plant. I mean, what can be done is what I think they have proposed. It's basically providing working capital at a 0% interest rate, always having control of your business that the money is not being squandered in any way, which is very important. But also at the same time, earmarking the money not for just working capital but for downstream integration of products. So you're effectively placed in the same level playing field as the big millers, the big sort of corporations. So not only will they should be giving you money to buy your meat or your maize, they should be giving you money at 0% interest rate to make your pasta and to make your bread. So you can compete in the same field. Honourable Morgan, regarding your point, I believe it's a very important point you made regarding the impediments that are being put across. that we've been conveying our impediments, and they have been some sort of funded and kind of place that they can help us in that way. But as you mentioned, it's very important that we get these downstream integrations done. At the same time, with the support of money, but the most important thing is we need some sort of institution or some sort of financial hub to assist us as a city. Now, what's happening is we are basically getting sort of disguised, not sort of disguised, but they're getting lost. It's sort of a pool of people that are looking for money, so to speak, whereas our projects and our initiatives are direct in trying to bring down the monopolistic ideas and infrastructure of form. So the ECA has been great against funding in the IFAC, but I feel like we just need to go one step further as far as the working capital is concerned, the IDs are concerned, even the banks that have happened. I mean, I feel the banks that are social, they actually have a social standing or they're actually getting back to the country by helping on these sort of projects. But all they worry about is basically, pretty simply, how much security you have, how much collateral you have, can you give your house, can you give your car, can you give personal guarantees? That's all they want to know, where are the guarantees? Honorable Colonel, regarding your point on denying wheat, that's the reason for the duty that's been imposed, that we can encourage the farmers to plant locally, but what happens is that the changeover, I think we're in a transition phase at the moment where the duty is being imposed, but farmers have just not yet ramp up their production as yet. By next year, we'll have a more close idea of whether that is happening or not. So if they haven't ramped up their production, then something more needs to be done by government, we should go by next year. But yes, the Western Cape wheat, out of all the wheat, besides the American or the Canadian wheat, which is a bit harder, but in any case, the pricing of the wheat is unaffordable. But after the American wheat, the Western Cape wheat is the best wheat I've ever molded, out of all the different wheat I've tried in the last 10 years. So we should be exploring that. I mean, why not? We've got the great prospect of our state. Can you share this one? Regarding the flour and the pre-priority, the pre-priority is what they call a double zero flour, which is a low protein white flour. It can be made with all the machinery that we have. But the reason why the 3 minutes have been doing this is because they've got very big plants. So the volume doesn't yet warrant for them to change their machinery, as you said, to make some machine set in
each other. You may have a small, we've heard about small mills.
Yes, that is. So effectively, that's, if we've got a small mill, we can supply the flour at a better price as opposed to importing it. But it's the same machinery, and the wheat is available locally.
You spoke about next year, you'll be able to know when, you know, whether the ramping up has had an impact. Next year is 12 months, which is around about which quarter?
Well, we should know the harvest comes in next year, October, November, by the end of this year. Sorry, you should know. We have an indication because our harvest comes in this October, November, our local harvest, and then our next year, October, November. So between the end of this year and 3 or 4 months after that, we'll know whether the farmers have any chance of growing more.
Yes, so you'll know this around about April next year.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Well, we'll be looking forward to that update. We'll be tracking that, all right? Thank you very much for that, Lisa. Thank you. Now we move on to our last presentation this morning, the session, and that is South African Fruit and Vegetable and Cannabis Association, Ms. Ashwood Palm, General Manager, and then two members, Mr. Dawson, representing Rhodes Foods Group, and Ms. Hoorn, representing the Langebaan Ashton Foods. Right. So, let's just get... So who's giving the presentation?
I will introduce myself in advance. Honourable Chair, Honourable Member of Parliament and Student College. I'm Joy Atkinson from the South African Fruit and Vegetable Tenants Association. And I will be doing the presentation on behalf of our members. I'm accompanied by Juliette Wynn of Langebaan and Ashton Foods, also a subsidiary of Tiger Brands, as well as Andrew Dawson of the Rhodes Group. Just to put it into perspective, the general profile of the industry, we've taken this presentation also, looking at our backward linkage into primary agriculture, of course focusing on agro-processing, but also highlighting the whole beneficiation process through to value-added products. How we actually operate, we have two legal entities that we utilize as our industry bodies, the one being the Cannabis Association, commonly known as SAFCA. This was established way back in 1954, so it has a very solid reputation, well established, and the main focus is really around your general manufacturing interests. So alongside that, we have the Export Council, which focuses a little bit more narrowly on export promotion and export development. And of course, it's modeled on the GPI structure of the Export Council. But overnight, we've also realized the importance of making those partnerships and linkages. Change the region. Now, we've also associated ourselves with grower associations. And the first three icons you see there are, in fact, grower associations. We regard the GPI certainly as our lead department. And we work very closely with them on all our projects across the value chain. On a more technical level, we work closely with the Department of Agriculture, purely because of the mandate of Chapter 20 of the Trade Book, which is signed with the Department of Agriculture, so hence the reason why our direct input in that regard goes there. We work with provincial government as well as provincial agencies, and then on a more technical level with the Agricultural Research Council, the likes of the Export Control Board, etc. We do have a national focus for climatic reasons more than anything else. Deciduous fruit is all situated down in the Western Cape. We have pineapples in the Eastern Cape, and we also have member companies who also have facilities for pineapples, as well as citrus, within Swaziland. So we already have established the regional integration into something. Vegetables are pretty much grown all over South Africa, although with a concentration up north. As I mentioned, it's a well-established industry, solid reputation. We are fortunate that we have very reliable supply of the raw materials going into our value-added products. That said, it's also a very high quality, giving rise to the fact that we are able to deliver a premium quality product. On a more socio-economic level, we are the main employers in many of the rural areas. It's labor intensive in terms of jobs, as well as requiring a much higher skill set given the actual nature of the process. We are direct contributors towards food security, rural development, community development, and launch promotion. As I mentioned, in terms of value addition, it is to the extent of over 200%. We also have the potential to be 90% of local origin. The change that I'd like to note there, we are in fact currently importing pineapples, and then obviously to make the pineapples, there is also importation of timber. But overall, within the sector, we support over 140,000 vendors in rural areas across South Africa. From a farming level, we source over 400,000 tons of fruit, over 200,000 tons of vegetables, which are processed annually, and this is sourced from about 1,500 farms, employing close to 20,000 farm workers. On the manufacturing level, again, the highlight of both facilities within South Africa and Shuffle. We have four fruit canning factories, two jam units, three fruit concentrate factories, one pineapple processor, and over 10 vegetable and related units, again, shared nationally. It's a very intensive environment, and we have more than 14,000 factory workers. In terms of the actual size of the industry, and one turns to Chapter 20 of the Tariff Book, our scope probably extends to about 80% of that chapter. I haven't included the frozen commodities here. We really focus only on the ambient products, but everything in its process form. So if one looks at your vegetables, jams, and your other related sources, etc., on the export level, we only export about 10% of the total value of close to 9 billion rand of that specific category, and the balance, about 90%, is consumed domestically. On the processed fruit, it's almost the opposite. 82% is exported, a value of close to 2 billion rand, and only 18% consumed domestically. So in total, just for your vegetables, processed fruit, and other related products, the actual size of the industry is over 11 billion rand. I've also included a separate line, the juice category, purely because many of our manufacturers also manufacture the industrial juices that go into further production for final juice products.
but just to give you an idea of the size of the Jewish industry, that totals about 8.5 billion rand. It's also significant for us because of the overlap of our members as well as the final juice manufacturers that we are looking to merge with the Hanover Association, also with the Jewish Association. Not going into too much detail about the challenges, but the key areas would be around market access globally. And here we're still seeing the impact of subsidies, especially even though the EU cap has been under review, there is still an impact for the industry around our direct competitors like Greece and Spain, who are enjoying these subsidies. It's also high tariffs. We don't really have any SDS issues as such, or major SDS issues, but certainly our biggest challenge is around high duties. Also, in terms of free trade agreements, even though we are being grateful for being included in the EPA agreement with EU, we're still not at the same level as some of our competitors globally. Input costs and infrastructure pressures, I'm sure I don't need to go into too much detail. You all know the impact it's had on the manufacturing sector, involving energy, water, not only supply but also costs, fuel pricing, also input pricing pressures, for example, around sugar and ports, expensive road transportation, and also the lack of a proper rail system. Cost of capital, we heard from the previous speaker, it's not only the uncost of capital by our commercial banks, but also the access to capital, including that by the IDC. On the domestic market level, the biggest threat to us is around the uncontrolled, the non-conforming imports coming into the country. And this is really amplified by the lack of a proper monitoring and inspection system around the imports coming into the country. And that's a direct impact on jobs in our local manufacturing. Also, strength of our retailers, where in many cases we have little to no room in negotiation. On the farming sector, we have certainly seen a lack of confidence among farmers with regard to future plantings, although that does appear to be changing because of the elevation of agro-processing within IPAC and so many other policies where we've seen the emergence and the elevation of agro-processing. We heard earlier on with regards to pressures on farmers around land reform, land availability, limited arable land, etc. In terms of our actual business environment and how we got to participate within the whole IPAC program, a couple of years ago, in fact before the first launch of the first installment of IPAC, the industry in fact commissioned a study through UCG and Professor Don Ross did the study for us, looking at the industry as a potential recipient for industrial policy interventions. The key findings coming out of that study was, number one, the industry does have growth potential, number two, it is export-driven, and number three, it is certainly competitive. And those three key areas identified and in fact saw the process of fruit and vegetable industry being included in the very first installment of IPAC. Over and above that, the study also showed that processing as a whole certainly has a prime spot within IPAC. And we've certainly seen that emerge as IPAC has emerged over or developed large over the years. How we've actually, in order to drive all of this, how have we actually positioned ourselves? Number one, we've made sure that we are properly aligned with the entity, as well as the objectives of IPAC. And through the Export Council movement, we've also utilized that structure in order to ensure alignment with the draft Integrated National Export Strategy. But we needed something to drive us. And I'll tell you now the actual details of our Triple P Food Canning Initiative. It's a public-private partnership model that I will explain shortly. And coupled with all of this, or putting all of this together, we believe that that will give us the sustainable platform to ultimately grow.
about the Double B Food Family Initiative. He's starting to announce years, also provided input into this earlier. This in fact is a partnership between the DPI and the industry. And everything that we do under this Triple B is based on our objective to create a sustainable platform for the long-term growth and competitiveness of the industry. Now the actual partnership is a complete vertical cross-cut of stakeholders within the industry. Number one, government on a national and a provincial level. Business from a manufacturing and a primary agriculture level, organized labor, as well as community, and here I mentioned it as formal community, local municipalities, as well as your community needs within our key areas. The entire of the Triple P hinges on four strategic pillars: transformation, marketing, market access, and competitiveness. And as our purpose had evolved, it also became the right vehicle to address the shaping for appropriate industrial policy interventions by industry. Now, the actual benefits of the Triple B, we certainly see our Minister Davies as being the architect of this entire model. He has given tremendous support in terms of ensuring that it is an effective model that delivers tangible results. So it's fully integrated across the value chain. As I said, well aligned with the NDDI PAC and INES. It's a common platform that allows very good coordination, not only between industry stakeholders, but across government departments. It's elevated the industry profile, it's unified our voice, and it's certainly been a vehicle to give us tangible results. We are currently wrapping up phase two of the Triple P, and there is no doubt that we will extend this into a phase three. Of particular interest under IPAC was our exports or program for us to increase exports to India and China. In terms of the context of particularly India and China, we do have a full market access program. And I don't want to go through all the details of that slide, but certainly on a domestic market level, our focus is to grow the consumption of canned fruit, as well as all canned fruit and vegetables, and protect the market. And we do this also in the context of struggle, saving, and also to harness the opportunities that will come from the new tripartite agreement between SADC, the EFE, and Commercial. The GOA is very positive that the GOA has been extended. The US gives us the opportunity to continue with our duty-free dispensation on certain products into the US. And within the BRICS context, we have focused particularly on China and India. If you look at our exports to China, it certainly is probably one of our most successful stories. Just over the period of the actual Triple P, or in fact a shorter period than that, we have grown our exports to a level of close to 340 million rand. And the stats you see on the map slide include both our direct exports to mainland China, as well as our exports to Hong Kong, because traditionally any routing of product in mainland China went via Hong Kong. And it's one of our objectives to make sure that we swing that trend, that more product goes directly into, that we start transacting directly with mainland China. So in short, it's our fastest growing export market. There's been a significant shift of direct trade to mainland China versus the historical routing via Hong Kong. Over 10 years, it's grown from 55 million in 2004 to 342 million in 2014. South African exports to China now represent 16% of our total exports, compared to 5 years ago, it was only 5%. Our challenges, however, is still around some non-trade barriers. We have seen quite a protectionist stance, or protectionist rules coming through. We've seen incidences of locked imports.
We had delays of up to 30, 40 days in some cases in clearing our containers. We still experience challenges around credit risks and credit guarantees, and we need to also encourage stronger support from our foreign representatives on some of these trade matters. But in terms of opportunities, it still has tremendous growth potential. We will continue participating in the DDI trade initiatives. There are projects for duty advantages, possibly because of the inclusion in BRICS. And then also opportunities around the promotion of the BRICS development plan.
I'm sorry to interrupt you in your presentation, Ms. Ashwood Palm. It was a very interesting presentation, but I am now attending another meeting, and I will ask the whip of the committee, the Honourable Blanco, to take over at this point, where you, I would expect you to have concluded your presentation by 25 past. Well, I see it's that much as half past, and then just to have a couple of questions. Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of India, perhaps not as significant as China, we also saw growth opportunities. Exports are very small at this stage, very low base of about 1.5 million in 2004, but it has in fact grown to a level of about 11 million in 2014. Very difficult to assess the true statistics, as South African product is also being re-exported by other geographies into India. And we have found examples of our product going by places like Dubai and Singapore into India. So the figure may be higher than what we've actually quoted. There are very difficult trading conditions in India, the high and complex duty structures, as well as business structures. But as I mentioned, even though the conditions are difficult, we have seen an increase in exports. But the actual buyer is not perhaps as vigorous as what we have into China. We've also shifted some of our energies and dive into Russia to harness the opportunities from the current geopolitical conditions. And we have seen significant growth of our products into Russia. But credit, risks, and guarantees are still very challenging. Designation of canned vegetables, another success, with the inclusion of canned vegetables under the FA Procurement Framework Act. Progress has been limited, although this was a major achievement for us to be part of that. I know the DCI is working directly with individual companies to work out ways in which they can harness some of the vendors and the procurement process. On a generic marketing campaign by the association, we also launched a domestic market campaign called Supercan with a payoff line, you can taste the goodness anytime. It was to increase the consumption of processed fruit and veg, create consumer awareness to buy local. The actual outcome of the campaign is that there is a stable consumption, we have certainly reversed the downward trend, and we've seen a growth in value over a two-year period. Fruit in the region of about 11%, veg 15%, juice 13%. And it was spread over various interventions from print media to television to reading suggestions, some PR, etc. On product development, and particularly the Eat Well, Eat Safe, Eat Local campaign, and these were also IPAC initiatives, our industry, we were very fortunate to participate in these events, linked with Pride in South Africa and the Culinary Association. It was led by the Minister, and again I'd like to just highlight why it was so important, because here again we've seen a strong coordination and back with linkages. Eat Well, in fact, is almost the mandate of the Department of Health. Eat Safe is really the mandate of the Department of Agriculture. It is local, it's a DPI mandate in terms of buying local. So again, our Minister coordinated these messages into one campaign. We participate in three events at the Mponya Mall in Soweto, Bangkok Mall in Athlone, as well as in the Eastern Cape. Mentions the integrated message in terms of product development in regional companies, launched a number of new products. But on an industry-wide basis, we've been involved in research and development on a generic level in respect of new health laws. The NCPC, as well as NSEP, two very short comments. They've engaged directly with individual companies. Audits have been conducted at some units. There's no report back, but we have re-established contact with the NCPC in order to take this further. Those of NSEP, we certainly supported excellent defenders, but the process has been challenging. Approvals have now been received in some cases, but the amounts have been limited in some, the application amount has been reduced, and we also have seen delays about 16 months. But that said, we believe it is an excellent incentive and certainly a way for us to enhance manufacturing. Transformation, I certainly think that this has been probably one of our most successful projects too. We have involved ourselves with the emerging farms tea planting scheme, where we are planting cultivars particularly for agro-processing. So we're almost giving those farmers a guaranteed outlet to our factories. In total, we have planted over 70,000 trees, average hectares about 55 hectares, spread across 9 farms. The Constitution Road Farm project is in that trust of 120 women, so it's a women-owned farm. And just to show you the significance of the multiplier effect, from the 55 hectares, we will get an additional 2,000 tons, estimated at, if we pay 3,000 rand per ton, the return to the farmers in the region of about 6 million. Canned fruit produced by that is an additional 88,000 cases. If we get 250 rand a case, we're talking a total return of about 22 million. So for the investment of just over 1 million rand to plant those trees, we in fact multiply that to almost a level of 22 million rand. Over and above that, individual companies have also invested significantly in this program. In closing, the industry has harnessed the opportunities and beneficiary of IDA. In particular, I've mentioned the examples of our success stories, the Triple B, China, Emerging Farmers Tree Planting Scheme. But we also know that there's a massive opportunity for vegetables. The flexible model for the Triple PFA, and for us to look a bit more closely for a monitoring system on imports. So the industry continues to have growth potential. We'll continue making sure that we move towards creating that enabling environment for us to overcome our challenges. But we'd like to thank the DPI for guarding us as a beneficiary and for the ongoing support in terms of the various interventions. Thank you.
Hello. Lamar, any questions or engagement with the presentation? Honorable Coronel, Honorable Albert, and Honorable Mkomi, in that sequence.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say, thank you very much. I think it was a very comprehensive and a very good presentation. Obviously, lots of challenges, but to my earlier question with regard to the wine industry, I think if I look to FAB, because this is what the wine industry should do, and they're not doing it. And you know, if you look at the fruit industry, many wine farmers are also fruit farmers, but they are involved in this. This is progress. Obviously, room for improvement, but I think we can take a key this agricultural sector has looked to the future and is doing what they can, and I think from the department side, they must have all the support they can foster.
Thank you, Jefferson. there's two challenges that stand out for me, and one is the trade barriers, and the other one is the it seems problems you have with accessing some of these government incentive schemes and so on. I wasn't aware whether you have actually contacted BGI regarding the various trade barriers that you face, whether they have any advice on it, and also with regard to the basic lack of or bad service delivery that you do receive when you apply for certain incentives, and is there anything that the committee can do on your behalf? Thank you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. My first number of questions. I'm not sure whether there has been a process. If there is none, I think we need to discuss this matter as well. We tried to discuss it once, but I'm not sure when I would want to conclude it. It's around the question of the Preferential Public Procurement Framework Act. It is said that it does not include service providers and that parties or entities. I think this is it's very familiar to me because it is also does not include the private sector in South Africa based on the World Trade Organization. I'm not sure whether we need to check whether I can reflect our machines with the trade world organizations on this line and check whether we can take the private sector to be on board. But I think it's going to be difficult for us to bombard private sector if government does not do it. So first we will need to check whether all departments of government comply to it. The second one is the question of the red tape that you're referring to. What you suggest, may you propose something, because there's an interdepartmental basis that we deal with. Whether it does not talk to issues of procurement and tendering process from national, provincial to local governments, what would be the bottleneck there? Of interest is the question of where do you get your cash from? Because you can get young people to collect all these cans and recycle them with you. You will train them, you integrate with them, you give them safe. And they give a lot to produce this kind of food in future, reduce crime. They're not going to be in there, you know, and try to steal. The last one is on the four pillars of your public-private partnership. I just want to focus on two. Is it true that transformation is an impediment it's a problem of the Chinese competitiveness? Is it true that we can't be competitive in South Africa because of transformation? From your own experience in your own industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you for just a few questions from me. With regards to NCPC and MSEP, you indicated that there were challenges of processing grant or funding from MSEP. Can you elaborate on that? And again, both on China and India, although you have, yeah, you are actually reflecting the increase in when it comes to trading and exporting to China, but at the same time, you are still faced with these challenges of protectionist, as you mentioned, and religions which are there. And in India, at the same time, you have all this, you are saying it seems to be a very difficult problem to make business there, especially when you export. Have you interfaced with GTI on this problem so that they can be discussed and taken up at the level of BRICS or WTO? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the questions. I will try and answer as best I can. I have Martin College with me as well, so any point where they can add anything. Okay. The first point was
volumes that came from Stokurno with regard to the projects that were implemented in the industry, and thanks for the encouragement too. In terms of your comments around the wine industry, obviously we focus predominantly on the processed fruits and vegetables, but there are certain mechanisms we can use in order to cluster with related industries. And there are similarities for wine, processed fruit, fresh fruit, there's the agro industry, indigenous tea. And if you start looking at it, we all face the same challenges. And we all have the same push in terms of promotion and marketing and getting messages across to consumers. So certainly, there are areas that we can work on. The good thing is, the new or the draft integrated national export strategy allows for that. It is looking at the whole concept of clustering, that we do things more on a joint basis and more collaborative basis in terms of driving our exports. In that regard, the question was also raised, do we get support from the DCI? Certainly we do. We have been fortunate in that we're part of the Export Council movement, number one, and number two, under the Triple P, which we in fact administer under the association. That Triple P is in fact chaired by the DCI. So there's almost an equal accountability across all stakeholders to ensure delivery. Then there was a question around the incentive schemes, MSEP, and I think this was reiterated by one of the last questions. Yes, we have those challenges in terms of MSEP, and I think it's more around process, certainly not around money. The actual spirit of MSEP, what is intended for, 100% in support thereof. But there have been challenges around the actual application process, and the delays. There's been substantial delays. Fortunately, we have the approvals now being, you know, coming through. In fact, some of the delays have been up to 16 months. And also not at the level that is applied for. Some companies only receive 50% of the actual amount that they apply for every reason. It differs from application to application. So those are the type of things that we have experienced problems with. Again, in terms of that, the DCI sectors has certainly been a very good entry point for us to be able to table our issues and thereafter link up with other departments within the DCI. And I mentioned earlier on the Triple P is in fact chaired by the DCI, but not experienced in the chair. So if you listen to her presentation early on, I in fact didn't even show her my presentation before the time, but it's exactly the same. Yes, it was. So that is our close relationship with that team. There was another one around trade barriers, and I think there was a similar question again around specifically China and India on the NDVs and the value groups. We've taken quite a structured approach to how we handle our market access matters, and we've put together an advocacy program. One of the slides you saw earlier on actually also is the whole world. You know, from WTO all the way through our emerging blocks as well as our more established blocks. And we have quite a structured approach as to how we, in fact, handle all of those different areas. Number one, as I mentioned, the Department of Agriculture, DAG, still has a technical mandate around the agricultural approach, even though our products are in processing. So we're a bit of a head in the sandwich. We can possibly slip through the cracks, and for that reason we ensure we have our bases on both sides. So we belong to the Agricultural Trade Forum, which is almost the highest level of trade forums within agriculture. And it's also the mechanism we use to make sure that we get our challenges on the table in that manner. Actual negotiating mandate is still with the DCI. So at the same time, we will also engage directly with units like ITEC within the DCI to make sure that, of course, they're also equally aware of our challenges when they sit at the negotiating table. So it is structured and with deliberate approach that we take in terms of market access. And it's not only when we have a crisis that we approach these two departments, it's a regular, ongoing interaction. On the triple PFA, again, it's more around produce than actually intention. The achievement of the inclusion of produce vegetables is a major achievement for us. And the fact that it was the first agricultural fund to be part of the triple PFA. But there is work to be done around making sure that the Act does extend to service providers to also procure local goods in order to deliver to our government department. So there's work to be done, I think, around making sure that the ending process and the actual procurement process is uniform across government levels and provincial levels. The sort of plans, I hope I'm going to be able to give you, but the different countries procure their plans in different ways. Some of them are buying from South African manufacturers, some of them are buying from companies that are importing from place. So there are different ways in which they actually procure their plans. As I mentioned earlier on, we do experience pricing pressures around Timplex. Then on the transformation, the question was asked, do we in fact see it as an inhibitor? Certainly not if it makes commercial sense. And the example that I quoted earlier on, the Emerging Farmers Tree Planting Scheme, is directly linked to us being able to increase our volumes. So it's giving the cultivars that are planted are not fresh plantings. It's varieties that has to go into processing. So it's guaranteed to come to us, to our factories. And our shows, I think, also demonstrated the multiplier effect. So everybody in the process, in fact, benefits from this. So we certainly don't see it as an inhibitor. But our project, of course, must be chosen for the right reasons. And it has to make commercial sense for all parties. I hope I've answered everyone's questions.
Thank you. And thank you very much for your presentation, especially from the department through your class with your stakeholders. Definitely, I'm sure all of us can see the importance of agro-processing and the fact that we must actually be able to access food security and take our place in the world market. So I'm sure we'll be interfacing from time to time with the department on this. And also, you must rest assured, because that's what we do have joint portfolio committee meetings with our other related, especially in our cluster, so that we tackle some of the issues which we have raised here with you. We do meet with agriculture, we do meet with forestry, so that we have all those concerns, land and rural development, so that we see this coordination. So I'm sure we'll be interfacing more and more, because this is actually the heart of dealing with problems in South Africa. Food security is a big issue, because we can address even the problem of unemployment as a result of poverty. So thank you very much. I'm sure